couldn't decide if he was amused or enraged by Rowan's words. "Don't touch me like that," when it was obvious the warrior prince felt quite the opposite. But Aelin, gods above, Aelin was still figuring it out. She was stomping down the street with delightful temper as she said, "If you've come along to reprimand—" "Oh," she sighed. "I don't suppose I can convince you to turn around."
"Not a chance in hell, sweetheart."
She rolled her eyes and continued on. They walked silently for block after block, until they reached the glimmering brown river. A decrepit, filthy length of cobblestone walkway ran along the water's edge. Below, abandoned and crumbling posts were all that was left of an ancient dock. She stared out across the muddy water, crossing her arms. The afternoon light was nearly blinding as it reflected off the calm surface. "Out with it," she said.
"Today, who you were today, that wasn't entirely a mask."
"That bothers you? You saw me cut down the king's men."
"It bothers me that the people we met today didn't bat an eye at that person. It bothers me that you were that person for a time."
"What do you want me to tell you? Do you want me to apologize for it?"
"No, gods, no, I just—"
The words were coming out all wrong.
"You know that when I went to those war camps, when I became general, I let the lines blur too, but I was still in the north, still home, among our people. You came here instead, and had to grow up with those piece of shit men, and I wish I'd been here. I wish Aerobin had somehow found me too and raised us together."
"You were older. You never would have let Aerobin take us. The moment he looked away, you would have grabbed me and run."
"True, very true, but the person you were today, and a few years ago, that person had no joy or love."
"Gods, I had some Adian. I wasn't a complete monster."
"Still, I just wanted you to know all that."
"That you feel guilty that I became an assassin while you endured the war camps and battlefields?"
"That I wasn't there. That you had to face those people alone."
He added,
"You came up with that whole plan by yourself and didn't trust any of us with it. You took on the burden of getting that money. I could have found a way. Gods, I would have married whatever wealthy princess or empress you asked me to, if they promised men and money."
"I'm never going to sell you off like chattel," she snapped. "And we have enough now to pay for an army, don't we?"
"Yes.
And then some."
"But that's beside the point, Aelin."
He took a breath.
"The point is, I should have been there then. But I am here now. I'm healed. Let me share this burden."
She tipped her head back, savoring the breeze off the river. "And what could I ever ask of you that I couldn't do myself?"
"That's the problem. Yes, you can do most things on your own. That doesn't mean you have to."
"Why should I risk your life?"
The words were clipped.
"Ah."
"Ah, because I'm still more expendable than you are."
"Not to me."
The words were barely more than a whisper.
Adian put a hand on her back. His own reply clogged in his throat. Even with the world going to hell around them, just hearing her say that, standing here beside her, it was a dream. She stayed silent, so he mastered himself enough to say,
"What exactly are we going to do now?"
She glanced at him. "I'm going to free magic, take down the king, and kill Dorian. The order of the last two items on that list could be flipped, depending on how it all goes." His heart stopped.
"What?"
"Was something about that not clear?"
"All of it. Every damn part of it."
He had no doubt she would do it, even the part about killing her friend. If Adian objected, she'd only lie and cheat and trick him.
"What and when and how?" he asked.
"Rowan's working on the first leg of it."
"That sounds a lot like I have more secrets that I'm going to spring on you whenever I feel like stopping your heart dead in your chest."
But her answering smile told him he would get nowhere with her. He couldn't decide if it charmed or disappointed him. Rowan was half asleep in bed by the time Aelin returned hours later, murmuring goodnight to Adian before slipping into her room. She didn't so much as glance in his direction as she began unbuckling her weapons and piling them on the table before the unlit hearth. Efficient, quick, quiet. not a sound from her.
I went hunting for Lorkin, he said. I tracked his scent around the city, but didn't see him.
Is he dead, then? Another dagger clattered onto the table.
The scent was fresh. Unless he died an hour ago, he's still very much alive.
Good, she said simply, as she walked into the open closet to change, or just to avoid looking at him some more. She emerged moments later in one of those flimsy little nightgowns, and all the thoughts went right out of his damn head. Well, apparently she'd been mortified by their earlier encounter, but not enough to wear something more matronly to bed. The pink silk clung to her waist and slid over her hips as she approached the bed, revealing the glorious length of her bare legs, still lean and tan from all the time they'd spent outdoors this spring. A strip of pale yellow lace graced the plunging neckline, and he tried, gods damn him, he honestly tried, not to look at the smooth curve of her breasts as she bent to climb into bed. He supposed any lick of self-consciousness had been flayed from her under the whips of Endovier, even though he'd tattooed over the bulk of the scars on her back. Their ridges remained. The nightmares, too, when she'd still startle awake and light a candle to drive away the blackness they'd shoved her into. The memory of the lightless pits they'd used for punishment. His fire heart, shut in the dark. He owed the overseers of Endovier a visit. Aelin might have an inclination to punish anyone who'd hurt him, but she didn't seem to realize that he, and Adian too, might also have scores to settle on her behalf. And as an immortal, he had infinite patience where those monsters were concerned. Her scent hit him as she unbound her hair and nestled into the pile of pillows. That scent had always struck him, had always been a call and a challenge. It had shaken him so thoroughly from centuries encased in ice that he'd hated her at first. And now that scent drove him out of his mind. They were both really damn lucky that she currently couldn't shift into her fey form and smell what was pounding through his blood. It had been hard enough to conceal it from her until now. Adian's knowing looks told him enough about what her cousin had detected. He'd seen her naked before, a few times, and gods, yes, there had been moments when he'd considered it. But he'd mastered himself. He'd learned to keep those useless thoughts on a short, short leash. Like that time she'd moaned at the breeze he sent her way on Beltane. The arch of her neck. The parting of that mouth of hers. The sound that came out of her. She was now lying on her side, her back to him.
About last night, he said through his teeth.
It's fine. It was a mistake.
Look at me. Turn over and look at me.
But she remained with her back to him, the moonlight caressing the silk bunched over the dip of her waist, the slope of her hip. His blood heated.
I didn't mean to snap at you.
He tried. I know you didn't. She tugged the blanket up as if she could feel the weight of his gaze lingering on that soft, inviting place between her neck and shoulder, one of the few places on her body that wasn't marked with scars or ink. I don't even know what happened, but it's been a strange few days, so let's just chalk it up to that, all right? I need to sleep. He debated telling her that it was not all right, but he said,
fine.
Moments later, she was indeed asleep. He rolled onto his back and stared up at the ceiling, tucking a hand beneath his head. He needed to sort this out, needed to get her to just look at him again, so he could try to explain that he hadn't been prepared. Having her touch the tattoo that told the story of what he'd done and how he'd lost Lyria, he hadn't been ready for what he felt in that moment. The desire hadn't been what shook him at all. It was just, Aelin had driven him insane these past few weeks, and yet he hadn't considered what it would be like to have her look at him with interest. It wasn't at all the way it had been with the lovers he'd taken in the past. Even when he'd cared for them, he hadn't really cared. Being with them had never made him think of that flower market. Never made him remember that he was alive and touching another woman, while Lyria was dead, slaughtered. And Aelin, if he went down that road, and if something happened to her, his chest seized at the thought. So he needed to sort it out, needed to sort himself out too,
no matter what he wanted from her. Even if it was agony.
This wig is horrible,
Lysandra hissed, patting her head as she and Aelin elbowed their way into the packed bakery, alongside a nicer stretch of the docks.
It won't stop itching.
Quiet, Aelin hissed back. You only have to wear it for another few minutes, not your whole damn life. Lysandra opened her mouth to complain some more, but two gentlemen approached, boxes of baked goods in hand, and gave them appreciative nods. Both Lysandra and Aelin had dressed in their finest, frilliest dresses. No more than two wealthy women on an afternoon stroll through the city, monitored by two bodyguards each. Rowan, Adian, Nezrin, and Kaol were leaning against the wooden dock posts outside, discreetly watching them through the large glass window of the shop. They were clothed and hooded in black, wearing two separate coats of arms. Both fake, acquired from Lysandra's stash for when she met with secretive clients.
That one,
Aelin said under her breath, as they pushed through the lunchtime crowd, fixing her attention on the most harried-looking woman behind the counter. The best time to come here, Nezrin had said, was when the workers were too busy to really note their clientele and would want them out of the way as quickly as possible. A few gentlemen parted to let them pass, and Lysandra cooed her thanks. Aelin caught the eye of the woman behind the counter.
What can I get you, miss?
Polite, but already sizing up the customers clustering behind Lysandra.
I want to talk to Nellie, Aelin said. She was to make me a brambleberry pie.
The woman narrowed her eyes. Aelin flashed a winning smile. The woman sighed and hustled through the wooden door, allowing a glimpse of the chaos of the bakery behind it. A moment later, she came back out, giving Aelin a she'll be out in a minute look, and going right to another customer. Fine. Aelin leaned against one of the walls and crossed her arms. Then she lowered them. A lady didn't loiter. So, Clarice has no idea? Aelin said under her breath, watching the bakery door.
None, Lysandra said, and any tears she shed were for her own losses. You should have seen her raging when we got into the carriage with those few coins. You're not frightened of having a target on your back?
I've had a target on my back since the day I was born, Aelin said, but I'll be gone soon enough. And I'll never be Selena again anyway. Lysandra let out a little hum.
You know I could have done this for you on my own.
Yes, but two ladies asking questions are less suspicious than one. Lysandra gave her a knowing look. Aelin sighed. It's hard, she admitted, to let go of the control.
I wouldn't know.
Well, you're close to paying off your debts, aren't you? You'll be free soon. A casual shrug.
Not likely. Clarice increased all of our debts since she got shut out of Aerobin's will. It seems she made some advance purchases and now has to pay for them.
Gods. She hadn't even considered that. Hadn't even thought about what it might mean for Lysandra and the other girls. I'm sorry for any extra burden it's caused you.
To have seen the look on Clarice's face when the will was read? I'll gladly endure another few years of this.
A lie, and they both knew it. I'm sorry, Aelin said again, and because it was all she could offer, she added, Evangeline looked well and happy just now. I could see if there was a way to take her when we go.
And drag an 11-year-old girl across kingdoms and into a potential war? I think not. Evangeline will remain with me. You don't need to make me promises.
How are you feeling? Aelin asked, after the other night. Lysandra watched three young women giggle to one another as they passed a handsome young man.
Fine. I can't quite believe I got away with it, but we both pulled it off, I suppose.
Do you regret doing it?
No. I regret that I didn't get to tell him what I really thought of him. I regret that I didn't tell him what I'd done with you. To see the betrayal and shock in his eyes. I did it so fast and had to go for the throat. And after I did, I just rolled over and listened until it was done. But
her green eyes were shadowed.
Do you wish you had been the one to do it?
No. And that was that. She glanced at her friend's saffron and emerald gown. That dress suits you.
She jerked her chin toward Lysandra's chest. And does wonders for them, too. The poor men in here can't stop looking.
Trust me, having larger ones isn't a blessing. My back hurts all the time.
Lysandra frowned down at her full breasts.
As soon as I get my powers back, these things will be the first to go.
Aelin chuckled. Lysandra would get her powers back, once that clock tower was gone. She tried not to let the thought sink in.
Really? If it wasn't for Evangeline, I think I'd just turn into something with claws and fangs and live in the wilderness forever.
No more luxury for you? Lysandra pulled a bit of lint off Aelin's sleeve.
Of course I like luxury. You think I don't love these gowns and jewels. But in the end, they're replaceable. I've come to value the people in my life more.
Evangeline is lucky to have you.
I wasn't just talking about her,
Lysandra said, and she chewed on her full lip.
You. I'm grateful for you.
Aelin might have said something back, something to adequately convey the flicker of warmth in her heart. Had a slim, brown-haired woman not emerged from the kitchen door. Nellie. Aelin pushed off the wall and flounced up to the counter, Lysandra in tow. Nellie said,
You came to see me about a pie?
Lysandra smiled prettily, leaning close.
Our supplier of pies, it seems, vanished with the shadow market.
She spoke so softly that even Aelin could barely hear.
Rumor has it you know where he is.
Nellie's blue eyes shuddered.
Don't know anything about that.
Aelin delicately placed her purse on the counter, leaning in so that the other customers and workers couldn't see as she slid it toward Nellie, making sure the coins clinked. Heavy coins.
We are very, very hungry for pie,
Aelin said, letting some desperation show.
Just tell us where he went.
No one escaped the shadow market alive.
Good. Just as Nezrin had assured them, Nellie didn't talk easily. It would be too suspicious for Nezrin to ask Nellie about the opium dealer. But two vapid, spoiled rich women? No one would think twice. Lysandra set another coin purse on the counter. One of the other workers glanced their way, and the courtesan said,
We'd like to place an order.
The worker focused on her customer again, unfazed. Lysandra's smile turned feline.
So tell us where to pick it up, Nellie.
Someone barked Nellie's name from the back, and Nellie glanced between them, sighing. She leaned forward and whispered,
They got out through the sewers.
We heard guards were down there too, Aelin said.
Not down far enough. A few went to the catacombs beneath. Still hiding out down there. Bring your guards, but don't let them wear their sigils. Not a place for rich folk.
Catacombs? Aelin had never heard of catacombs beneath the sewers.
Interesting.
Nellie withdrew, striding back into the bakery. Aelin looked down at the counter. Both bags of coins were gone. They slipped out of the bakery unnoticed and fell into step with their four bodyguards.
Well, Nezrin murmured. Was I right?
Your father should fire Nellie, Aelin said. Opium addicts or piss poor employees.
She makes good bread,
Nezrin said, and then fell back to where Kaol was walking behind them.
What'd you learn? Adian demanded. And do you care to explain why you needed to know about the shadow market?
Patience, Aelin said. She turned to Lysandra. You know, I bet the men around here would cut out their snarling if you turned into a ghost leopard and snarled back at them.
Lysandra's brows rose.
Ghost leopard?
Adian swore.
Do me a favor and never turn into one of those.
What are they?
Lysandra said. Rowan chuckled under his breath and stepped a bit closer to Aelin. She tried to ignore it. They'd barely spoken all morning.
Adian shook his head. Devils cloaked in fur. They live up in the Staghorns, and during the winter they creep down to prey on livestock. As big as bears, some of them. Meaner. And when the livestock runs out, they prey on us.
Aelin patted Lysandra's shoulder.
Sounds like your kind of creature.
Adian went on.
They're white and gray, so you can barely make them out against the snow and rock. You can't really tell they're on you until you're staring right into their pale green eyes.
His smile faltered, as Lysandra fixed her green eyes on him and cocked her head.
Despite herself, Aelin laughed.
Tell us why we're here,
Kaol said, as Aelin climbed over a fallen wooden beam in the abandoned shadow market. Beside her, Rowan held a torch high, illuminating the ruins and the charred bodies. Lysandra had gone back to the brothel, escorted by Nezrin. Aelin had swiftly changed into her suit in an alley and stashed her gown behind a discarded crate, praying no one snatched it before she could return.
Just be quiet for a moment, Aelin said,
tracing the tunnels by memory. Rowan shot her a glance, and she lifted a brow.
What?
You've come here before, Rowan said. You came to search the ruins. That's why you smelled of ash, too.
Adian said, Really, Aelin? Don't you ever sleep? Kaol was watching her now, too, though maybe that was to avoid looking at the bodies littered around the halls.
What were you doing here? The night you interrupted my meeting with Brullo and Ress.
Aelin studied the cinders of the oldest stalls, the soot stains, the smells. She paused before one shop whose wares were now nothing but ash and twisted bits of metal.
Here we are, she trilled,
and strode into the hewn rock stall, its stones burned black.
It still smells like opium, Rowan said, frowning.
Aelin brushed her foot over the ashy ground, kicking away cinders and debris.
It had to be somewhere.
Ah. She swept away more and more, the ash staining her black boots and suit. At last, a large misshapen stone appeared beneath her feet, a worn hole near its edge. She said casually, Did you know that in addition to dealing opium, this man was rumored to sell hellfire?
Rowan whipped his gaze to her.
Hellfire? Nearly impossible to attain or make, mostly because it was so lethal. Just a vat of it could take out half of a castle's retainer wall. He would never talk to me about it, of course, Aelin went on. No matter how many times I came here, he claimed he didn't have it. Yet he had some of the ingredients around the shop, all very rare, so there must have been a supply of it here. She hauled open the stone trap door to reveal a ladder descending into the gloom. None of the males spoke, as the reek of the sewers unfurled. She crouched, sliding onto the first rung, and Adian tensed, but he wisely said nothing about her going first. Smoke-scented darkness enveloped her as she climbed down, 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 until her feet hit smooth rock. The air was dry, despite their proximity to the river. Rowan came next, dropping his torch onto the ancient stones to reveal a cavernous tunnel. And bodies. Several bodies. Some of them nothing but dark mounds in the distance, cut down by the Vogue. There were fewer to the right, toward the Avery. They'd probably anticipated an ambush at the river mouth, and gone the other way, to their doom. Not waiting for Adian or Kaol to climb down, Aelin began following the tunnel, Rowan silent as a shadow at her side, looking, listening. After the stone door groaned closed above, she said into the darkness, When the king's men set this place alight, if the fire had hit that supply, Rifthold probably wouldn't be here anymore. At least not the slums, and probably more.
Gods above,
Kaol murmured from a few paces behind. Aelin paused at what looked like an ordinary grate in the sewer floor, but no water ran beneath. And only dusty air floated up to meet her.
That's how you're planning to blow up the clock tower. With hellfire,
Rowan said, crouching at her side. He made to grab her elbow as she reached for the grate, but she sidled out of range.
Aelin, I've seen it used, seen it wreck cities. It can literally melt people.
Good, so we know it works then.
Adian snorted, peering down into the gloom beyond the grate.
So, what? You think he kept his supply down there?
If he had a professional opinion about hellfire, he kept it to himself.
The sewers were too public, but he had to keep it near the market, Aelin said, yanking on the grate.
It gave a little, and Rowan's scent caressed her as he leaned to help haul it off the opening.
It smells like bones and dust down there, Rowan said,
his mouth quirked to the side.
But you suspected that already.
Kaol said from a few feet behind,
That's what you wanted to know from Nelly, where he was hiding, so he can sell it to you.
Aelin lit a bit of wood from Rowan's torch. She carefully poised it just beneath the lip of the hole before her, the flame lighting a drop of about 10 feet, with cobblestones beneath. A wind pushed from behind, toward the hole, into it. She set aside the flame and sat on the lip of the hole, her legs swinging in the dimness beneath. What Nelly doesn't know yet is that the opium monger was actually caught 2 days ago, killed on sight by the king's men. You know, I do think Aerobin sometimes had no idea whether he really wanted to help me or not. It had been his casual mention of it at dinner that had set her thinking, planning. Rowan murmured,
So his supply in the catacombs is now unguarded.
She peered into the gloom below.
Finders keepers, she said,
and jumped. Chapter 50.
How did those lowlifes keep this place a secret?
Aelin breathed as she turned to Kaol. The four of them stood atop a small staircase, the cavernous space beyond them illuminated in flickering gold by the torches Adian and Rowan bore. Kaol was shaking his head, surveying the space. Not a sign of scavengers, thank the gods.
Legend has it that the Shadow Market was built on the bones of the God of Truth.
Well, they got the bones part right.
In every wall, skulls and bones were artfully arranged, and every wall, even the ceiling, had been formed from them. Even the floor at the foot of the stairs was laid with bones of varying shapes and sizes.
These aren't ordinary catacombs,
Rowan said, setting down his torch.
This was a temple.
Indeed, altars, benches, and even a dark reflection pool lay in the massive space. Still more sprawled away into shadow.
There's writing on the bones,
Adian said, striding down the steps and onto the bone floor. Aelin grimaced.
Careful,
Rowan said, as Adian went to the nearest wall. Her cousin lifted a hand in lazy dismissal.
It's in every language, all in different handwriting,
Adian marveled, holding his torch aloft as he moved along the wall.
Listen to this one. I am a liar, I am a thief. I took my sister's husband and laughed while I did it.
A pause. He silently read another.
None of this writing. I don't think these were good people.
Aelin scanned the bone temple. We should be quick, she said. Really damn quick. Adian, you take that wall, Kaol the center, Rowan the right. I'll grab the back. Careful of where you wave your fire. Gods help them if they unwittingly placed a torch near the hellfire. She took a step down, and then another, then the last one onto the bone floor. A shudder crawled through her, and she glanced at Rowan out of instinct. His tight face told her all she needed to know, but he still said,
This is a bad place.
Kaol strode past them, his sword out.
Then let's find this hellfire supply and get out.
Right. All around them, the empty eyes of the skulls in the walls, in the structures, the pillars in the center of the room, seemed to watch.
Seems like this God of Truth, Adian called from his wall, was more of a sin-eater than anything. You should read some of the things people wrote, the horrible things they did. I think this was a place for them to be buried, and to confess on the bones of other sinners.
No wonder no one wanted to come here,
Aelin muttered, as she strode off into the dark. The temple went on, and they found supplies, but no whisper of scavengers or other residents. Drugs, money, jewelry, all hidden inside skulls and within some of the bone crypts on the floor, but no hellfire. Their cautious steps on the bone floor were the only sounds. Aelin moved deeper and deeper into the gloom. Rowan soon cleared his side of the temple and joined her in the back, exploring the alcoves and little hallways that branched off into the slumbering dark.
The language, Aelin said to him. It gets older and older the farther back we go. The way they spell the words, I mean.
Rowan twisted toward her from where he'd been carefully opening a sarcophagus. She doubted an ordinary man would be able to shift the stone lid.
Some of them even date their confessions. I just saw one from 700 years ago.
Makes you seem young, doesn't it?
He gave her a wry smile. She quickly looked away. The bone floor clicked as he stepped toward her.
Aelin?
She swallowed hard, staring at a carved bone near her head. I killed a man for sport when I was 20, and never told anyone where I buried him. I kept his finger bone in a drawer. Dated 900 years ago.
900?
Aelin studied the darkness beyond. If the shadow market dated back to Gavin, then this place had to have been built before it, or around the same time.
The god of truth.
She drew Damaris from across her back, and Rowan tensed.
What is it?
She examined the flawless blade.
The sword of truth.
That's what they called Damaris. Legend said the bearer, Gavin, could see the truth when he wielded it.
And?
Mala blessed Brannan, and she blessed Goldrin. She peered into the gloom.
What if there was a god of truth? A sin-eater.
What if he blessed Gavin and the sword? Rowan now stared toward the ancient blackness.
You think Gavin used this temple?
Aelin weighed the mighty sword in her hands.
What sins did you confess to, Gavin?
She whispered into the dark. Deep into the tunnels they went. So far that when Adian's triumphant cry of, "Found it!" reached Aelin and Rowan, she could barely hear it, and barely cared. Not when she stood before the back wall, the wall behind the altar of what had no doubt been the original temple. Here, the bones were nearly crumbling with age, the writing almost impossible to read. The wall behind the altar was of pure stone, white marble, and carved in word marks. And in the center was a giant rendering of the eye of Elena.
Cold.
It was so cold in here that their breath clouded in front of them, mingling.
Whoever this god of truth was,
Rowan murmured, as if trying not to be overheard by the dead.
He was not a benevolent sort of deity.
No, with a temple built from the bones of murderers and thieves and worse. She doubted this god had been a particular favorite. No wonder he'd been forgotten. Aelin stepped up to the stone. Damaris turned icy in her hand, so frigid her fingers splayed, and she dropped the sword on the altar floor and backed away. Its clang against the bones was like thunder. Rowan was instantly at her side, his swords out. The stone wall before them groaned. It began shifting, the symbols rotating, altering themselves. From the flicker of her memory, she heard the words,
"It is only with the eye that one can see rightly."
"Honestly?" Aelin said, as the wall at last stopped rearranging itself from the proximity of the sword. A new intricate array of word marks had formed.
"I don't know why these coincidences keep surprising me."
"Can you read it?"
Rowan asked. Adian called their names, and Rowan called back, telling them both to come. Aelin stared up at the carvings.
"It might take me some time."
"Do it. I don't think it was chance that we found this place."
Aelin shook off her shiver. No, nothing was ever chance. Not when it came to Elena and the word keys. So she loosed a breath and began.
It's about Elena and Gavin, she said. "The first panel here,"
she pointed to a stretch of symbols,
"describes them as the first king and queen of Otterlin, how they were mated. Then it jumps back to the war."
Footsteps sounded, and light flickered, as Adian and Kaol reached them. Kaol whistled. "I have a bad feeling about this," Adian said. He frowned at the giant rendering of the eye, and then at the one around Aelin's neck.
"Get comfortable," she said.
Aelin read a few more lines, deciphering and decoding.
So hard. The word marks were so damn hard to read. "It describes the demon wars with the Volg that had been left here after the first war. And,"
she read the line again,
And the Volg this time were led, her blood chilled, by one of the three kings. The king who remained trapped here after the gate was sealed. It says that to look upon a king, to look upon a Volg king was to gaze into, she shook her head, madness? Despair? I don't know that symbol. He could take any form, but he appeared to them now as a handsome man with golden eyes. The eyes of the Volg kings. She scanned the next panel. They did not know his true name, so they called him Erewhon, the Dark King. Adian said, then Elena and Gavin battled him, your magic necklace saved their asses, and Elena called him by his true name, distracting him enough for Gavin to slay him. Yes, yes, Aelin said, waving a hand, but no.
No,
Kaol said. Aelin read further, and her heart skipped a beat.
What is it?
Rowan demanded, as if his fey ears had noted her heart's stutter. She swallowed hard, running a shaking finger under a line of symbols. This is Gavin's confessional, from his deathbed.
None of them spoke.
Her voice trembled as she said, they did not slay him, not by sword, or fire, or water, or might could Erewhon be slain or his body be destroyed. The eye.
Aelin touched her hand to the necklace. The metal was warm.
The eye contained him. Only for a short time. No, not contained, but put him to sleep?
I have a very, very bad feeling about this,
Adian said. So they built him a sarcophagus of iron and some sort of indestructible stone. And they put it in a sealed tomb beneath a mountain, a crypt so dark that there was no air, no light. Upon the labyrinth of doors, she read, they put symbols, unbreakable by any thief or key or force.
You're saying that they never killed Erewhon,
Kaol said. Gavin had been Dorian's childhood hero, she recalled, and the story had been a lie. Elena had lied to her.
Where did they bury him?
Rowan asked softly. They buried him. Her hands shook so badly that she lowered them to her sides. They buried him in the Black Mountains and built a keep atop the tomb, so that the noble family who dwelled above might forever guard it.
There are no Black Mountains in Otterlin,
Kaol said. Aelin's mouth went dry. Rowan? She said quietly. How do you say Black Mountains in the old language? A pause, and then a loosened breath.
Morath,
Rowan said. She turned to them, her eyes wide. For a moment, they all just stared at one another. What are the odds, she said, that the king is sending his forces down to Morath by mere coincidence?
What are the odds,
Adian countered,
that our illustrious king has acquired a key that can unlock any door, even a door between worlds, and his second-in-command happens to own the very place where Erewhon is buried. The king is insane,
Kaol said.
If he plans to raise Erewhon.
Who says he hasn't already? Adian asked. Aelin glanced at Rowan. His face was grim.
If there is a Volg king in this world, we need to move fast. Get those word keys and banish them all back to their hellhole.
She nodded. Why now, though? He's had the two keys for at least a decade. Why bring the Volg over now?
It would make sense, Kaol said. If he's doing it in anticipation of raising Erewhon again, to have an army ready for him to lead.
Aelin's breathing was shallow. The summer solstice is in 10 days. If we bring magic down on the solstice, when the sun is strongest, there's a good chance my power will be greater then, too. She turned to Adian. Tell me you found a lot of hellfire. His nod wasn't as reassuring as she'd hoped. Chapter 51 Manon and her 13 stood around a table in a room deep within the witch's barracks.
You know why I called you here,
Manon said.
None of them replied.
None of them sat. They'd barely spoken to her since butchering that tribe in the White Fangs. And then today,
More news. More requests.
The Duke asked me to pick another coven to use. A Blackbeak coven.
Silence.
I'd like your suggestions.
They didn't meet her eyes, didn't utter a word.
Manon snapped down her iron teeth. You would dare defy me?
Sorrel cleared her throat, attention on the table.
Never you, Manon. But we defy that human worm's right to use our bodies as if they were his own.
Your High Witch has given orders that will be obeyed.
You might as well name the 13, Asterin said,
the only one of them holding Manon's gaze. Her nose was still swollen and bruised from the beating.
For we would sooner that be our fate than hand over our sisters.
And you all agree with this? That you wish to breed demon offspring until your bodies break apart?
We are Blackbeaks, Asterin said, her chin high. We are no one's slaves, and we will not be used as such. If the price for that is never returning to the wastes, then so be it.
None of the others so much as flinched.
They'd all met.
They'd discussed this beforehand. What to say to her? As if she were in need of managing. Was there anything else you all decided in your little council meeting?
There are things, Manon,
Sorrel said.
Things that you need to hear.
Betrayal.
This was what mortals called betrayal. I don't give a shit about what you fools dared believe I need to hear. The only thing I need to hear is the sound of you saying, yes, wing leader, and the name of a god's damned coven.
Pick one yourself, Asterin snapped.
The witches shifted. Not a part of the plan, was it? Manon stalked around the table to Asterin, past the other witches who didn't dare turn to face her. You have been nothing but a waste from the minute you set foot in this keep. I don't care if you have flown at my side for a century. I am going to put you down like the yapping dog you are.
Do it, Asterin hissed. Rip my throat out. Your grandmother will be so proud that you finally did.
Sorrel was at Manon's back.
Is that a challenge?
Manon said too quietly.
Asterin's gold-flecked black eyes danced.
It's a...
But the door opened and shut. A young man with golden hair now stood in the room, his black stone collar gleaming in the torchlight.
He shouldn't have gotten in.
There had been witches everywhere, and she'd set sentinels from another coven to guard the halls so that none of the Duke's men could catch them unawares. As one, the 13 turned toward the handsome young man. And as one, they flinched as he smiled, and a wave of darkness crashed into them. Darkness without end, darkness even Manon's eyes couldn't penetrate, and Manon was again standing before that Kraken witch, a dagger in her hand.
We pity you for what you do to your children. You force them to kill and hurt and hate until there is nothing left inside of them, of you. That is why you are here.
The Kraken wept.
Because of the threat you posed to the monster you call Grandmother, when you chose mercy and you saved your rival's life.
Manon violently shook her head, blinking. Then it was gone. There was only darkness, and the 13, shouting to one another, struggling, and...
A golden-haired young man had been in that room with the yellow legs, Alid had said.
Manon started prowling through the darkness, navigating the room by memory and smell. Some of her 13 were nearby, some had backed against the walls, and the otherworldly reek of the man, of the demon inside him. The smell wrapped around her fully, and Manon drew Windcleaver. Then there he was, chuckling as someone, Ghislaine, started screaming. Manon had never heard that sound. She'd never heard any of them scream with fear and pain. Manon hurtled into a blind sprint and tackled him to the ground. No sword. She didn't want a sword for this execution. Light cracked around her, and there was his handsome face and that collar,
wing leader.
He grinned, in a voice that was not from this world. Manon's hands were around his throat, squeezing, her nails ripping through his skin. Were you sent here? She demanded. Her eyes met his, and the ancient malice in them shrank back.
Get away,
he hissed. Manon did no such thing. Were you sent here? She roared. The young man surged up, but then Astarin was there, pinning his legs.
Make him bleed,
she said from behind Manon. The creature continued thrashing, and in the darkness, some of the 13 were still shouting in agony and terror.
Who sent you? Manon bellowed.
His eyes shifted, turning blue, turning clear. It was with a young man's voice that he said,
Kill me, please, please kill me. Roland, my name was Roland, tell my-
Then blackness spread across his eyes again, along with pure panic at whatever he beheld in Manon's face, and in Astarin's over her shoulder. The demon inside the man shrieked,
Get away!
She'd heard and seen enough. Manon squeezed harder, her iron nails shredding through mortal flesh and muscle. Black, reeking blood coated her hand, and she ripped harder into him, until she got to the bone and slashed through it, and his head thumped against the floor. Manon could have sworn he sighed. The darkness vanished, and Manon was instantly on her feet, gore dripping from her hands as she surveyed the damage. Ghislaine sobbed in the corner. All the color leached from her rich, dark skin. Thea and Kaya were both tear-stained and silent, the two lovers gaping at each other. And Etta and Briar, both of her shadows, both born and raised in darkness. They were on their hands and knees, puking, right alongside the green-eyed demon twins, Faelene and Fallon. The rest of the 13 were unharmed, still flush with color, some panting from the momentary surge of rage and energy, but fine. Had only some of them been targeted? Manon looked at Astarin, at Sorrel and Vesta and Lynn and Imogen, then at the ones that had been drained. They all met her gaze this time. Get away, the demon had screamed, as if in surprise and terror. After looking her in the eyes. Those who had been affected, their eyes were ordinary colors, brown and blue and green. But the ones who hadn't, black eyes flecked with gold. And when he'd looked at Manon's eyes, gold eyes had always been prized among blackbeaks. She'd never wondered why. But now wasn't the time, not with this reeking blood soaking into her skin. This was a reminder, Manon said, her voice bouncing hollowly off the stones. She turned from the room. Leave them to each other. Get rid of that body. Manon waited until Caltaine was alone, drifting up one of the forgotten spiraling staircases of Morath before she pounced. The woman didn't flinch as Manon pinned her against the wall, her iron nails digging into Caltaine's pale bare shoulders. Where does the shadow fire come from? Dark, empty eyes met hers.
From me.
Why you? What magic is it? Vog power? Manon studied the collar around the woman's thin throat. Caltaine gave a small, dead smile.
It was mine, to start. Then it was melded with another source. And now, it is the power of every world, every life.
Nonsense. Manon pushed her harder into the dark stone. How do you take that collar off?
It does not come off.
Manon bared her teeth. And what do you want with us? To put collars on us?
They want kings.
Caltaine breathed, her eyes flickering with some strange, sick delight.
Mighty kings. Not you.
More drivel. Manon growled, but then there was a delicate hand on her wrist. And it burned. Oh gods, it burned. And her bones were melting. Her iron nails had become molten ore. Her blood was boiling. Manon leaped back from Caltaine, and only gripping her wrist told her that the injuries weren't real.
I'm going to kill you, Manon hissed. But shadowfire danced on Kaltane's fingertips, even as the woman's face went blank again. Without a word, as if she had done nothing, Kaltane walked up the stairs and vanished. Alone in the stairwell, Manon cradled her arm, the echo of pain still reverberating through her bones. Slaughtering that tribe with Windcleaver, she told herself, had been a mercy.
Chapter 52. As they left the Sin Eater's temple, Kaol marveled at how strange it was to be working with Aelin and her court. How strange it was not to be fighting her for once. He shouldn't have even gone with them, given how much there was to do. Half the rebels had left Rifthold, more fleeing every day. And those who remained were pushing to relocate to another city. He'd kept them in line as much as he could, relying on Nezrin to back him up whenever they started to bring up his own past with the king. There were still people going missing, being executed. Still people whom they rescued as often as they could from the butchering blocks. He would keep doing it until he was the last rebel left in this city. He would stay to help them, to protect them. But if what they'd learned about Erewhon was true, gods help them all. Back on the city street, he turned in time to see Rowan offer a helping hand to pull Aelin out of the sewers. She seemed to hesitate, but then gripped it, her hand swallowed by his. A team, solid and unbreaking. The Fey Prince hoisted her up and set her on her feet. Neither of them immediately let go of the other. Kaol waited for that twist and tug of jealousy, for the bile of it to sting him. But there was nothing, only a flickering relief, perhaps, that Aelin had Rowan. He must be feeling truly sorry for himself, he decided. Footsteps sounded, and they all went still, weapons drawn, just as, I've been looking for you for an hour, Nezrin said, hurrying out of the alley shadows. What's... She noticed their grim faces. They'd left the hellfire down there, hidden in a sarcophagus for safekeeping, and to keep themselves from being melted should things go very wrong. He was surprised Aelin had let him know that much, though how she planned to get into the castle she hadn't told him. Just tell Res and Brello and the others to stay the hell away from the clock tower, was her only warning so far. He'd almost demanded to know what her plans were for the other innocents in the castle, but it had been nice to have one afternoon with no fighting, with no one hating him, to feel like he was part of their unit.
I'll fill you in later, Kaol said to her, but Nezrin's face was pale. What is it?
Aelin, Rowan, and Adian stalked up to them with that unnatural, immortal silence. Nezrin squared her shoulders.
I received word from Ren. He got into some minor trouble on the border, but he's fine. He has a message for you. For us.
She brushed back a strand of her inky hair. Her hand trembled slightly. Kaol braced himself, fought against the urge to put a hand on her arm.
The king, Nezrin went on, has been building an army down in Morath, under Duke Parrington's supervision. The Vol guards around Rifthold are the first of them. More are coming up this way.
Volg foot soldiers, then. Morath, it seemed, might very well be their first or last battleground. Adian cocked his head, the wolf incarnate. How many?
Too many, Nezrin said. We haven't gotten a full count. Some are camped inside mountains surrounding the war camp. Never out all at once, never in full sight. But it's an army greater than any he's assembled before.
Kaol's palms became slick with sweat.
And more than that, Nezrin said,
her voice hoarse.
The king now has an aerial cavalry of Iron Teeth witches, a host 3,000 strong, who have been secretly training in the Farian Gap to ride wyverns that the king has somehow managed to create and breed. Gods above.
Aelin lifted her head, gazing up at the brick wall as if she could see that aerial army there. The movement revealing the ring of scars around her neck.
Dorian.
They needed Dorian on the throne. Needed this shut down.
You are certain of this?
Adian said. Rowan was staring at Nezrin, his face the portrait of a cold, calculating warrior. And yet he'd somehow moved closer to Aelin. Nezrin said tightly,
"We lost many spies to attain that information."
Kaol wondered which of them had been her friends. Aelin spoke, her voice flat and hard. "Just to make sure I have it right, we are now facing 3,000 bloodthirsty Iron Teeth witches on wyverns, and a host of deadly soldiers gathering in the south of Otterlin, likely to cut off any alliance between Terrasen and the southern kingdoms."
"Leaving Terrasen stranded."
"Say it,"
Kaol silently beseeched her.
"Say that you need Dorian free and alive."
Adian mused.
"Melisandre might be capable of uniting with us."
He pinned Kaol with an assessing stare. A general stare.
"Do you think your father knows about the wyverns and witches? Aniel is the closest city to the Farian Gap."
His blood chilled. Was that why his father had been so keen to get him home?
He sensed Adian's next question before the general spoke.
"He doesn't wear a black ring,"
Kaol said.
"But I doubt you'd find him a pleasant ally. If he bothered to ally with you at all."
"Things to consider,"
Rowan said.
"Should we need an ally to punch through the southern lines?"
Gods, they were actually talking about this. War. War was coming. And they might not all survive it.
"So what are they waiting for?" Adian said, pacing. "Why not attack now?"
Aelin's voice was soft.
"Cold. Me. They're waiting for me to make my move."
None of them contradicted her. Kaol's voice was strained as he shoved aside his swarming thoughts.
"Anything else?"
Nezrin reached into her tunic and pulled out a letter. She handed it to Adian.
"From your second in command. They all worry for you."
"There's a tavern down the block. Give me 5 minutes and I'll have a reply for you,"
Adian said, already striding away. Nezrin followed him, giving Kaol a silent nod. The general said over his shoulder to Rowan and Aelin, his heavy hood concealing any telltale features,
"I'll see you at home."
Meeting over. But Aelin suddenly said,
"Thank you."
Nezrin paused, somehow knowing the queen had spoken to her. Aelin put a hand on her heart.
"For all that you're risking, thank you."
Nezrin's eyes flickered as she said,
"Long live the queen."
But Aelin had already turned away. Nezrin met Kaol's gaze, and he followed after her in Adian. An indestructible army, possibly led by Erewhon, if the king of Otterlin were insane enough to raise him. An army that could crush any human resistance.
But maybe not if they allied with magic wielders.
That is, if the magic wielders, after all that had been done to them, even wanted to bother saving their world.
"Talk to me,"
Rowan said from behind her, as Aelin stormed down street after street. She couldn't. She couldn't form the thoughts, let alone the words. How many spies and rebels had lost their lives to get that information? And how much worse would it feel when she sent people to their deaths? When she had to watch her soldiers butchered by those monsters? If Elena had thrown her a bone tonight, somehow leading that opium monger to the Sin Eater's temple so that they might find it, she wasn't feeling particularly grateful.
"Aelin,"
Rowan said, quietly enough for only her and the alley rats to hear. She'd barely survived Baba Yellowlegs. How would anyone survive an army of witches trained in combat? He gripped her elbow, forcing her to stop.
"We'll face this together,"
he breathed, his eyes shining bright and canines gleaming.
"As we have in the past, to whatever end."
She trembled, like a god's damned coward, and yanked free, stalking away. She didn't even know where she was going. Only that she had to walk, had to find a way to sort herself out, sort the world out, before she stopped moving, or else she would never move again. Wyverns, witches, a new, even bigger army. The alley pressed in on her, sealing as tightly as one of those flooded sewer tunnels.
Talk to me,
Rowan said again, keeping a respectful distance behind. She knew these streets. A few blocks down, she would find one of the Vogue sewer entrances. Maybe she'd jump right in and hack a few of them to pieces. See what they knew about the Dark King Erewhon, and whether he was still slumbering under that mountain. Maybe she wouldn't bother with questions at all. There was a strong, broad hand at her elbow, yanking her back against a hard male body. But the scent wasn't Rowan's. And the knife at her throat, the blade pressing so hard that her skin stung and split. Going somewhere, princess, Lorcan breathed into her ear. Rowan had thought he knew fear. He had thought he could face any danger with a clear head and ice in his veins. Until Lorcan appeared from the shadows, so fast that Rowan hadn't even scented him, and put that knife against Aelin's throat. You move, Lorcan snarled in Aelin's ear, and you die. You speak, and you die. Understand? Aelin said nothing. If she nodded, she'd slice her throat open on the blade. Blood was shining there already, just above her collarbone, filling the alley with its scent. The smell of it alone sent Rowan sliding into a frozen, murderous calm. Understand? Lorcan hissed, jostling her enough that her blood flowed a bit faster. Still, she said nothing, obeying his order. Lorcan chuckled. Good. I thought so. The world slowed and spread around Rowan with sharp clarity, revealing every stone of the buildings and the street, and the refuse and rubbish around them. Anything to give him an advantage, to use as a weapon. If he'd had his magic, he would have choked the air from Lorcan's lungs by now, would have shattered through Lorcan's own dark shields with half a thought. If he'd had his magic, he would have had a shield of their own around them from the start, so this ambush could never happen. Aelin's eyes met his. And fear. That was genuine fear shining there. She knew she was in a compromised position. They both knew that no matter how fast he was, she was, Lorcan's slice would be faster. Lorcan smiled at Rowan, his dark hood off for once, no doubt so that Rowan could see every bit of triumph in Lorcan's black eyes. No words, Prince. Why? Was all Rowan could ask. Every action, every possible plan still left him too far away. He wondered whether Lorcan realized that if he killed her, Lorcan himself would be next. Then Maeve. And maybe the world for spite. Lorcan craned his head to look at Aelin's face. Her eyes narrowed to slits. Where is the word key? Aelin tensed, and Rowan willed her not to speak, not to taunt Lorcan. We don't have it, Rowan said. Rage, unending cataclysmic rage, pounded through him. Exactly what Lorcan wanted. Exactly how Rowan had witnessed the Demi-Fey warrior manipulate their enemies for centuries. So Rowan locked that rage down. Tried to, at least. I could snap this neck of yours so easily, Lorcan said, grazing his nose against the side of her throat. Aelin went rigid. The possessiveness in that touch alone half blinded him with feral wrath. It was an effort to stifle it again, as Lorcan murmured onto her skin. You're so much better when you don't open that hideous mouth. We don't have the key, Rowan said again. He'd slaughter Lorcan in the way only immortals learned and liked to kill. Slowly, viciously, creatively. Lorcan's suffering would be thorough. What if I told you we were working for the same side? Lorcan said. I'd tell you that Maeve works for only one side. Her own. Maeve didn't send me here. Rowan could almost hear the words Aelin was struggling to keep in. Liar. Piece of shit liar. Then who did? Rowan demanded. I left. If we're on the same side, then put your rutting knife down. Rowan growled. Lorcan chuckled. I don't want to hear the princess yapping. What I have to say applies to both of you. Rowan waited,
taking every second to assess and reassess their surroundings, the odds. At last, Lorkin loosened the blade slightly. Blood slid down Aelin's neck, onto her suit.
You made the mistake of your short, pathetic mortal life when you gave Maeve that ring.
Through the lethal calm, Rowan felt the blood drain from his face.
You should have known better,
Lorkin said, still gripping Aelin around the waist.
You should have known she wasn't some sentimental fool, pining after her lost love. She had plenty of things from Athril. Why would she want his ring? His ring and not Goldrin?
Stop dancing around it and tell us what it is.
But I'm having so much fun. Rowan leashed his temper so hard that he choked on it.
The ring,
Lorkin said,
wasn't some family heirloom from Athril. She killed Athril. She wanted the keys and the ring, and he refused and she killed him. While they fought, Brannan stole them away, hiding the ring with Goldrin and bringing the keys here. Didn't you ever wonder why the ring was in that scabbard? A demon hunting sword, and a ring to match.
If Maeve wants to kill demons, Rowan said, we won't complain.
The ring doesn't kill them. It grants immunity from their power. A ring forged by Mala herself. The Volg could not harm Athril when he wore it.
Aelin's eyes widened even more, the scent of her fear shifting to something far deeper than the dread of bodily harm.
The bearer of that ring,
Lorkin went on, smiling at the terror coating her smell,
need never fear being enslaved by Wordstone. You handed her your own immunity.
That doesn't explain why you left.
Lorkin's face tightened.
She slaughtered her lover for the ring, for the keys. She will do far worse to attain them now that they are on the playing board again. And once she has them, my queen will make herself a god.
So?
The knife remained too close to Aelin's neck to risk attacking.
It will destroy her.
Rowan's rage stumbled.
You plan to get the keys, to keep them from her.
I plan to destroy the keys. You give me your word key,
Lorkin said, opening the fist he'd held against Aelin's abdomen,
and I'll give you the ring.
Sure enough, in his hand shone a familiar gold ring.
You shouldn't be alive, Rowan said. If you had stolen the ring and fled, she would have killed you already.
It was a trap. A pretty, clever trap.
I move quickly.
Lorkin had been hauling ass out of Wendlin. It didn't prove anything, though.
The others?
None of them know. You think I trust them not to say anything?
The blood oath makes betrayal impossible.
I'm doing this for her sake,
Lorkin said. I'm doing this because I do not wish to see my queen become a demon herself.
I am obeying the oath in that regard.
Aelin was bristling now, and Lorkin closed his fingers around the ring again.
You're a fool, Rowan. You think only of the next few years, decades. What I am doing is for the sake of the centuries, for eternity. Maeve will send the others, you know, to hunt you, to kill you both. Let tonight be a reminder of your vulnerability. You will never know peace for a single moment. Not one. And even if we don't kill Aelin of the Wildfire, time will.
Rowan shut out the words. Lorkin peered at Aelin, his black hair shifting with the movement.
Think it over, princess. What is immunity worth? In a world where your enemies are waiting to shackle you, where one slip could mean becoming their eternal slave.
Aelin just bared her teeth. Lorkin shoved her away, and Rowan was already moving, lunging for her. She whirled, the built-in blades in her suit flashing free. But Lorkin was gone.
After deciding that the slices on her neck were shallow, and that she was in no danger of dying from them, Rowan didn't talk to her for the rest of the journey home. If Lorcan was right... No, he wasn't right. He was a liar, and his bargain reeked of Maeve's tricks. Aelin pressed a handkerchief to her neck as they walked, and by the time they reached the apartment, the wounds had clotted. Adian, mercifully, was already in bed. Rowan strode right into their bedroom. She followed him in, but he reached the bathroom and quietly shut the door behind him. Running water gurgled a heartbeat later. A bath. He'd done a good job concealing it, and his rage had been... She'd never seen someone that wrathful. But she'd still seen the terror on his face. It had been enough to make her master her own fear as fire started crackling in her veins. And she'd tried... Gods damn it, she'd tried to find a way out of that hold. But Lorcan... Rowan had been right. Without her magic, she was no match for him. He could have killed her. All she had been able to think about, in spite of her kingdom, in spite of all she still had to do, was the fear in Rowan's eyes. And that it would be a shame if he never knew, if she never told him. Aelin cleaned her neck in the kitchen, washed the little bit of blood from her suit, and hung it in the living room to dry, then pulled on one of Rowan's shirts and climbed into bed. She barely heard any splashing. Maybe he was just lying in the tub, staring at nothing with that hollow expression he'd worn since Lorcan had removed the knife from her throat. Minutes passed, and she shouted goodnight to Adian, whose echoing goodnight rumbled through the walls. Then the bathroom door opened. A veil of steam rippled out, and Rowan appeared, a towel slung low across his hips. She took in the muscled abdomen, the powerful shoulders, but the emptiness in those eyes. She patted the bed. Come here. He stood there, his eyes lingering on her scabbed neck. We both are experts at clamming up, so let's make an agreement to talk right now like even-tempered, reasonable people. He didn't meet her gaze as he padded toward the bed and slumped down beside her, stretching out over the blankets. She didn't even reprimand him for getting the sheets wet, or mention that he could have taken half a minute to put on some clothes. Looks like our days of fun are over, she said, propping her head with a fist and staring down at him. He gazed blankly at the ceiling. Witches, dark lords, fey queens? If we make it through this alive, I'm going to take a nice, long vacation. His eyes were cold. Don't shut me out, she breathed.
Never, he murmured. That's not...
He rubbed his eyes with his thumb and forefinger.
I failed you tonight.
His words were a whisper in the darkness. Rowan.
He got close enough to kill you. If it had been another enemy, they might have.
The bed rumbled as he took a shuddering sigh and lowered his hand from his eyes. The raw emotion there made her bite her lip. Never, never did he let her see those things.
I failed you. I swore to protect you, and I failed tonight.
Rowan, it's fine.
It's not fine.
His hand was warm as it clamped on her shoulder. She let him turn her onto her back, and found him half on top of her as he peered into her face. His body was a massive, solid force of nature above hers. But his eyes, the panic lingered.
I broke your trust.
You did no such thing. Rowan, you told him you wouldn't hand over the key. He sucked in a breath, his broad chest expanding.
I would have. Gods, Aelin. He had me and he didn't even know it. He could have waited another minute and I would have told him ring or no ring. Erewhon, witches, the king, Maeve. I would face all of them, but losing you...
He bowed his head, his breath warming her mouth as he closed his eyes.
I failed you tonight,
he murmured, his voice hoarse.
I'm sorry.
His pine and snow scent wrapped around her. She should move away, roll out of reach.
Don't touch me like that.
Yet there he was, his hand a brand on her bare shoulder, his body nearly covering hers.
You have nothing to be sorry for, she whispered. I trust you, Rowan.
He gave her a barely perceptible nod.
I missed you,
he said quietly, his gaze darting between her mouth and eyes.
When I was in Wendlin, I lied when I said I didn't. From the moment you left, I missed you so much I went out of my mind. I was glad for the excuse to track Lorcan here, just to see you again. And tonight, when he had that knife at your throat.
The warmth of his calloused finger bloomed through her as he traced a path over the cut on her neck.
I kept thinking about how you might never know that I missed you with only an ocean between us. But if it was death separating us, I would find you. I don't care how many rules it would break. Even if I had to get all three keys myself and open a gate, I would find you again. Always.
She blinked back the burning in her eyes as he reached between their bodies and took her hand, guiding it up to lay against his tattooed cheek. It was an effort to remember how to breathe, to focus on anything but that smooth, warm skin. He didn't tear his eyes away from hers, as she grazed her thumb along his sharp cheekbone, savoring each stroke. She caressed his face, that tattoo, never breaking his stare, even as it stripped her naked.
I'm sorry,
he still seemed to say. She kept her stare locked on his as she let go of his face, and slowly, making sure he understood every step of the way, tilted her head back, until her throat was arched and bared before him.
Aelin,
he breathed, not in reprimand or warning, but a plea. It sounded like a plea. He lowered his head to her exposed neck and hovered a hair's breadth away. She arched her neck farther, a silent invitation. Rowan let out a soft groan and grazed his teeth against her skin. One bite. One movement was all it would take for him to rip out her throat. His elongated canines slid along her flesh, gently, precisely. She clenched the sheets to keep from running her fingers down his bare back and drawing him closer. He braced one hand beside her head, his fingers twining in her hair. No one else, she whispered. I would never allow anyone else at my throat. Showing him was the only way he'd understand that trust, in a manner that only the predatory fae side of him would comprehend. No one else, she said again. He let out another low groan, answer and confirmation and request, and the rumble echoed inside her. Carefully, he closed his teeth over the spot where her lifeblood thrummed and pounded, his breath hot on her skin. She shut her eyes. Every sense narrowing on that sensation, on the teeth and mouth at her throat, on the powerful body trembling with restraint above hers. His tongue flicked against her skin. She made a small noise that might have been a moan, or a word, or his name. He shuddered and pulled back, the cool air kissing her neck. Wildness, pure wildness sparked in those eyes. Then he thoroughly, brazenly surveyed her body, his nostrils flaring delicately as he scented exactly what she wanted. Her breathing turned ragged as he dragged his stare to hers, hungry, feral, unyielding.
Not yet,
he said roughly, his own breathing uneven.
Not now.
Why? It was an effort to remember speech with him looking at her like that, like he might eat her alive. Heat pounded through her core.
I want to take my time with you, to learn every inch of you. And this apartment has very, very thin walls. I don't want to have an audience,
he added as he leaned down again, brushing his mouth over the cut at the base of her throat.
When I make you moan, Aelin.
Oh, by the word. She was in trouble. So much rutting trouble, and when he said her name like that. This changes things, she said, hardly able to get the words out.
Things have been changing for a while already. We'll deal with it.
She wondered how long his resolve to wait would last if she lifted her face to claim his mouth with her own, if she ran her fingers down the groove of his spine, if she touched him lower than that. But wyverns, witches, army,
Erewhon. She loosed a heavy breath.
Sleep,
she mumbled.
We should sleep.
He swallowed again, slowly peeling himself away from her and strode to the closet to dress. Honestly, it was an effort not to leap after him and rip that damn towel away. Maybe she should make Adian go stay somewhere else, just for a night. And then she would burn in hell for all eternity for being the most selfish, awful person to ever grace the earth. She forced herself to put her back to the closet, not trusting herself to so much as look at Rowan without doing something infinitely stupid. Oh, she was in so much God's damned trouble.
Chapter 53.
Drink,
the demon prince coaxed in a lover's croon.
Savor it.
The prisoner was sopping on the floor of the dungeon cell, his fear and pain and memories leaking from him. The demon prince inhaled them as though they were opium.
Delicious.
It was. He hated himself, cursed himself. But the despair coming from the man as his worst memories ripped him to shreds.
It was intoxicating. It was strength.
It was life. He had nothing and no one anyway. If he got the chance, he would find a way to end it. For now, this was eternity. This was birth and death and rebirth. So he drank the man's pain, his fear, his sorrow, and he learned to like it.
Chapter 54. Manon stared at the letter that the trembling messenger had just delivered. Alid was trying her best to look as though she wasn't observing every flick of Manon's eyes across the page, but it was hard not to stare when the witch snarled with every word she read. Alid lay on her pallet of hay, the fire already dying down to embers, and groaned as she sat up, her sore body aching. She'd found a water skein in the larder, and had even asked the cook if she could take it for the wing leader. He didn't dare object, or begrudge her the two little bags of nuts she had also nabbed for the wing leader. Better than nothing. She'd stored it all under her pallet, and Manon hadn't noticed. Any day now, the wagon would be arriving with supplies. When it left, Alid would be on it, and never have to deal with any of this darkness again. Alid reached for the pile of logs and added two to the fire, sending sparks shooting up in a wave. She was about to lie down again when Manon said from the desk, "In 3 days, I'll be heading out with my 13.
"To where?"
Alid dared ask. From the violence with which the wing leader had read the letter, it couldn't be anywhere pleasant. "To a forest in the north, to—" Manon caught herself and moved across the floor, her steps light but powerful, as she came to the hearth and chucked the letter in. "I'll be gone for at least 2 days. If I were you, I'd suggest using that time to lie low." Alid's stomach twisted at the thought of what exactly it might mean for the wing leader's protection to be thousands of miles away. But there was no point in telling Manon that. She wouldn't care, even if she'd claimed Alid as one of her kind. It meant nothing, anyway. She wasn't a witch. She'd be escaping soon. She doubted anyone here would really think twice about her disappearance.
"I'll lie low,"
Alid said. Perhaps in the back of a wagon, as it made its way out of Morath and to freedom beyond. It took 3 whole days to prepare for the meeting. The matron's letter had contained no mention of the breeding and slaughter of witches. In fact, it was as if her grandmother hadn't received any of Manon's messages. As soon as Manon got back from this little mission, she'd start questioning the keep's messengers. Slowly, painfully. The 13 were to fly to coordinates in Otterlin, smack in the middle of the kingdom, just inside the tangle of oak-walled forest, and arrive a day before the arranged meeting to establish a safe perimeter. For the king of Otterlin was to at last see the weapon her grandmother had been building, and apparently wanted to inspect Manon as well. He was bringing his son, though Manon doubted it was for guarding his back in the way that the heirs protected their matrons.
She didn't particularly care about any of it. A stupid, useless meeting she'd almost wanted to tell her grandmother. A waste of her time. At least seeing the king would provide an opportunity to meet the man who was sending out these orders to destroy witches and make monstrosities of their witchlings. At least she would be able to tell her grandmother in person about it. Maybe even witness the matron make mincemeat of the king once she learned the truth about what he'd done. Manon climbed into the saddle, and Abraxos walked out onto the post, adjusting to the latest armor the aerial blacksmith had crafted, finally light enough for the wyverns to manage, and now to be tested on this trip. Wind bit at her, but she ignored it, just as she'd ignored her 13. Asterin wouldn't speak to her, and none of them had spoken about the Volg prince that the Duke had sent to them. It had been a test, to see who would survive, and to remind her what was at stake. Just as unleashing Shadowfire on that tribe had been a test. She still couldn't pick a coven, and she wouldn't, until she'd spoken to her grandmother. But she doubted that the Duke would wait much longer. Manon gazed into the plunge, at the ever-growing army sweeping across the mountains and valleys like a carpet of darkness and fire. So many more soldiers hidden beneath it. Her shadows had reported that very morning about spotting lean, winged creatures with twisted human forms soaring through the night skies. Too swift and agile to track, before they vanished into the heavy clouds and did not return. The majority of Morath's horrors, Manon suspected, had yet to be revealed. She wondered if she'd command them, too. She felt the eyes of her 13 on her, waiting for the signal. Manon dug her heels into Abraxos's side, and they free fell into the air. The scar on her arm ached. It always ached, more than the collar, more than the cold, more than the Duke's hands on her, more than anything that had been done to her. Only the shadow fire was a comfort. She had once believed that she'd been born to be queen. She had since learned that she'd been born to be a wolf. The Duke had even put a collar on her like a dog, and had shoved a demon prince inside her. She'd let it win, for a time, curling up so tightly inside herself that the prince forgot she was there. And she waited. In that cocoon of darkness, she bided her time, letting him think her gone, letting them do what they wanted to the mortal shell around her. It was in that cocoon where the shadow fire began to flicker, fueling her, feeding her. Long ago, when she was small and clean, flames of gold had crackled at her fingers, secret and hidden. Then they had vanished, as all good things had vanished. And now they had returned, reborn within that dark shell as phantom fire. The prince inside her did not notice when she began to nibble at him. Bit by bit, she stole morsels of the otherworldly creature that had taken her body for its skin, who did such despicable things with it. The creature noticed the day she took a bigger bite, big enough that it screamed in agony. Before it could tell anyone, she leaped upon it, tearing and ripping with her shadow fire until only ashes of malice remained, until it was no more than a whisper of thought. Fire. It did not like fire of any kind. For weeks now she had been here, waiting again, learning about the flame in her veins, how it bled into the thing in her arm and reemerged as shadow fire. The thing spoke to her sometimes, in languages she had never heard, that had maybe never existed. The collar remained around her neck, and she let them order her around, let them touch her, hurt her. Soon enough she would find true purpose, and then she would howl her wrath at the moon. She'd forgotten the name she'd been given, but it made no difference. She had only one name now. Death, Devourer of Worlds. Chapter 55. Aelin fully believed in ghosts. She just didn't think they usually came out during the day.
Rowan's hand clamped onto her shoulder right before sunrise. She took one look at his tight face and braced herself.
Someone's broken into the warehouse.
Rowan was out of the room, armed and fully ready to shed blood before Aelin could grab her own weapons.
Gods above. He moved like the wind, too.
She could still feel his canines at her throat, rasping against her skin, pressing down lightly. On near silent feet, she went after him, finding him and Adian standing before the apartment door, blades in hand, their muscled, scarred backs rigid. The windows. They were their best options for escape if it was an ambush. She reached the two males just as Rowan eased open the door to reveal the gloom of the stairwell. Collapsed in a heap, Evangeline was sobbing on the stair landing. Her scarred face deathly pale, and those citrine eyes wide with terror as she peered up at Rowan and Adian. Hundreds of pounds of lethal muscle and bared teeth. Aelin shoved past them, taking the stairs by twos and threes until she reached the girl. She was clean, not a scratch on her. Are you hurt? She shook her head, her red gold hair catching the light of the candle that Rowan brought down. The staircase shuddered with every step he and Adian took.
Tell me,
Aelin panted, silently praying it wasn't as bad as it seemed. Tell me everything.
They took her. They took her. They took her.
Who? Aelin said, brushing back the girl's hair, wondering whether she would panic if she held her.
The king's men, Evangeline whispered. They came with a letter from Aerobin. Said it was in Aerobin's will that they be told about Lysandra's bloodline.
Aelin's heart stopped dead. Worse. Far worse than what she'd braced for.
They said she was a shapeshifter. They took her, and they were going to take me too, but she fought them, and she made me run, and Clarice wouldn't help.
Where did they take her? Evangeline sobbed.
I don't know. Lysandra said I was to come here if anything ever happened. She told me to tell you to run.
She couldn't breathe, couldn't think. Rowan knelt down beside them and slid his arms around the girl, scooping her up, his hand so big that it nearly enveloped the entire back of her head. Evangeline buried her face in his tattooed chest, and Rowan murmured wordless sounds of comfort. He met Aelin's eyes over the girl's head.
We need to be out of this house in 10 minutes, until we figure out if he betrayed you, too.
As if he'd heard it, Adian edged past them, going to the warehouse window that Evangeline had somehow slipped in through. Lysandra, it seemed, had taught her charge a few things. Aelin scrubbed at her face and raised a hand on Rowan's shoulder as she stood, his skin warm and soft beneath her calloused fingers.
Nezrin's father. We'll ask him to look after her today.
Aerobin had done this. A final card up his sleeve. He'd known. About Lysandra. About their friendship. He didn't like to share his belongings. Kaol and Nezrin burst into the warehouse a level below, and Adian was halfway to them before they even realized he was there. They had more news. One of Ren's men had contacted them moments ago. A meeting was to take place tomorrow in Oakwald, between the king, Dorian, and the wing leader of his aerial cavalry, with a delivery of one new prisoner headed for Morath.
You have to get her out of the tunnels, Aelin said to Kaol and Nezrin, as she stormed down the stairs.
Right now. You're human. They won't notice you at first. You're the only ones who can go into that darkness. Kaol and Nezrin exchanged glances. Aelin stalked up to them.
You have to get her out right now.
For a heartbeat, she wasn't in the warehouse. For a heartbeat, she was standing in a beautiful bedroom before a bloody bed and the wrecked body splayed upon it. Kaol held out his hands.
We're better off spending the time setting up an ambush.
The sound of his voice. The scar on his face was stark in the dim light. Aelin clenched her fingers into a fist. Her nails, the nails that had shredded his face, digging in.
They could be feeding on her, she managed to say.
Behind her, Evangeline let out a sob. If they made Lysandra endure what Aelin had endured when she fought the Volg Prince.
Please, Aelin said,
her voice breaking on the word. Kaol noticed then, where her eyes had focused on his face. He paled, his mouth opening. But Nezrin reached for her hand, her slim tan fingers cool against Aelin's clammy palms.
We will get her back. We will save her. Together.
Kaol just held Aelin's gaze, his shoulders squaring as he said,
Never again.
She wanted to believe him.
Chapter 56. A few hours later, seated on the floor of a ramshackle inn on the opposite side of Rifthold, Aelin peered at a map they'd marked with the meeting's location spot, about half a mile from the Temple of Temis. The tiny temple was just inside the cover of Oakwald, perched atop a towering slice of rock in the middle of a deep ravine. It was accessible only via two dangling footbridges attached to either side of the ravine, which had spared it from invading armies over the years. The surrounding forest would likely be empty, and if wyverns were flying in, they would no doubt arrive under cover of darkness the night before. Tonight. Aelin, Rowan, Adian, Nezrin, and Kaol sat around the map, sharpening and polishing their blades as they talked over their plan. They'd given Evangeline to Nezrin's father, along with more letters for Terrison and the Bane, and the baker hadn't asked any questions. He'd only kissed his youngest daughter on the cheek and announced that he and Evangeline would bake special pies for their return. If they returned.
What if she has a collar or a ring on?
Kaol asked from across their little circle.
Then she loses a head or a finger, Adian said baldly.
Aelin shot him a look.
You don't make that call without me.
And Dorian? Adian asked.
Kaol was staring at the map as if he would burn a hole through it.
Not my call, Aelin said tightly.
Kaol's eyes flashed to hers.
You don't touch him.
It was a terrible risk, to bring them all within range of a Volg prince, but... We paint ourselves in word marks, Aelin said. All of us. To ward against the prince. In the 10 minutes it had taken them to grab their weapons, clothes, and supplies from the warehouse apartment, she'd remembered to get her books on word marks, which now sat on the little table before the sole window in the room. They'd rented 3 for the night. One for Aelin and Rowan, one for Adian, and the other for Kaol and Nezrin. The gold coin she'd slapped onto the innkeeper's counter had been enough to pay for at least a month, and his silence.
Do we take out the king? Adian said.
We don't engage,
Rowan replied,
until we know for sure we can kill the king and neutralize the prince with minimal risk. Getting Lysandra out of that wagon comes first.
Agreed,
Aelin said. Adian's gaze settled on Rowan.
When do we leave?
Aelin wondered at his yielding to the Fey Prince.
I don't want those wyverns or witches sniffing us out,
Rowan said, the commander bracing for the battlefield.
We arrive just before the meeting takes place, long enough to find advantageous spots and to locate their scouts and sentries. The witch's sense of smell is too keen to risk discovery. We move in fast.
She couldn't decide whether or not she was relieved. The clock chimed noon. Nezrin rose to her feet.
I'll order lunch.
Kaol got up, stretching.
I'll help you bring it up.
Indeed, in a place like this, they would get no kitchen-to-room service. Though in a place like this, Aelin supposed, Kaol might very well be going to keep an eye on Felix's back.
Good.
Once they left, Aelin picked up one of Nezrin's blades and began polishing it. A decent dagger, but not great. If they lived past tomorrow, maybe she would buy her a better one as a thank you. Too bad Lorkin's a psychotic bastard, she said. We could use him tomorrow. Rowan's mouth tightened. What will he do when he finds out about Adian's heritage? Adian set down the dagger he'd been honing.
Will he even care?
Halfway through polishing a short sword, Rowan paused.
Lorkin might not give a shit, or he might find Adian intriguing, but he would more likely be interested in how Adian's existence can be used against Gavriel.
She eyed her cousin,
his golden hair now seeming more proof of his ties to Gavriel than to her.
Do you want to meet him?
Perhaps she'd brought this up only to keep from thinking about tomorrow.
A shrug. I'd be curious, but I'm not in any rush. Not unless he's going to drag his cadre over here to help with the fighting.
Such a pragmatist. She faced Rowan, who was back at work on the sword. Would they ever be convinced to help, despite what Lorcan said?
They had provided aid once, during the attack on Mistward. Unlikely, Rowan said, not looking up from the blade. Unless Maeve decides that sending you succor is the next move in whatever game she's playing. Maybe she'll want to ally with you to kill Lorcan for his betrayal.
He mused.
Some of the Fae who used to dwell here might still be alive and in hiding. Perhaps they could be trained, or already have training.
I wouldn't count on it, Adian said. The little folk I've seen and felt in Oakwald.
But the Fae, not a whisper of them there.
He didn't meet Rowan's eyes, and instead started cleaning Kaol's final unsharpened blade.
The king wiped them out too thoroughly. I would bet any survivors are stuck in their animal forms.
Aelin's body became heavy with a familiar grief.
We'll figure all that out later.
If they lived long enough to do so.
For the rest of the day and well into the evening, Rowan planned their course of action with the same efficiency she'd come to expect and cherish. But it didn't feel comforting now, not when the danger was so great, and everything could change in a matter of minutes. Not when Lysandra might already be beyond saving.
You should be sleeping,
Rowan said, his deep voice rumbling across the bed and along her skin.
The bed's lumpy, Aelin said. I hate cheap inns.
His low laugh echoed in the near dark of the room. She'd rigged the door and window to alert them to any intruder, but with the ruckus coming from the seedy tavern downstairs, they would have a hard time hearing anyone in the hall, especially when some of the rooms were rented by the hour.
We'll get her back, Aelin.
The bed was much smaller than hers, small enough that her shoulder brushed his as she turned over. She found him already facing her, his eyes gleaming in the dark.
I can't bury another friend.
You won't.
If anything ever happened to you, Rowan.
Don't.
He breathed.
Don't even say it. We dealt with that enough the other night.
He lifted a hand, hesitated, then brushed back a strand of hair that had fallen across her face. His calloused fingers scraped against her cheekbone, then caressed the shell of her ear. It was foolish to even start down this road, when every other man she'd let in had left some wound in one way or another, accidentally or not. There was nothing soft or tender on his face, only a predator's glittering gaze.
When we get back,
he said,
remind me to prove you wrong about every thought that just went through your head.
She lifted an eyebrow.
Oh?
He gave her a sly smile that made thinking impossible. Exactly what he wanted, to distract her from the horrors of tomorrow.
I'll even let you decide how I tell you. With words.
His eyes flicked once to her mouth.
Or with my teeth and tongue.
A thrill went through her blood, pooling in her core. Not fair. Not fair at all to tease her like that.
This miserable inn is rather loud, she said,
daring to slide a hand over his bare pectoral, then up to his shoulder. She marveled at the strength beneath her palm. He shuddered, but his hands remained at his sides, clenched and white-knuckled.
It's too bad Adian could still probably hear through the wall.
She gently scraped her nails across his collarbone, marking him, claiming him, before leaning in to press her mouth to the hollow of his throat. His skin was so smooth, so invitingly warm.
Aelin,
he groaned. Her toes curled at the roughness in his voice.
Too bad,
she murmured against his neck. He growled, and she chuckled quietly as she rolled back over and closed her eyes. Her breathing easier than it had been moments before. She'd get through tomorrow, regardless of what happened. She wasn't alone. Not with him, and not with Adian also beside her. She was smiling when the mattress shifted. Steady footsteps padded toward the dresser, and the sounds of splashing filled the room, as Rowan dunked the pitcher of cold water over himself. Chapter 57.
I can smell them all right, Adian said,
his whisper barely audible as they crept through the underbrush, each of them clothed in green and brown to remain concealed in the dense forest. He and Rowan walked several paces ahead of Aelin, arrows loosely knocked in their bows as they picked out the way with their keen hearing and smell. If she had her damn fey form, she could be helping, instead of lingering behind with Kaol and Nezrin, but not a useful thought, she told herself. She would make do with what she had. Kaol knew the forest best, having come hunting this way with Dorian countless times. He'd laid out a path for them the night before, but had yielded leading to the two fey warriors and their impeccable senses. His steps were unfaltering on the leaves and moss beneath their boots, his face drawn but steady, focused. Good. They passed through the trees of Oakwald so silently that the birds didn't stop their chirping. Brannan's forest. Her forest. She wondered if its denizens knew what blood flowed in her veins, and hid their little party from the horrors waiting ahead. She wondered if they'd somehow help Lysandra when it came time. Rowan paused 10 feet ahead and pointed to three towering oaks. She halted, her ears straining as she scanned the forest. Growls and roars of beasts that sounded far too large rumbled toward them, along with the scrape of leathery wings on stone. Bracing herself, she hurried to where Rowan and Adian were waiting by the oak trees, her cousin pointing skyward to indicate their next movement. Aelin took the center tree, hardly disturbing a leaf or twig as she climbed. Rowan waited until she'd reached a high branch before coming up after her, in about the same amount of time she had done it, she noted a bit smugly. Adian took the tree to the right, with Kaol and Nezrin scaling the left. They all kept climbing, as smoothly as snakes, until the foliage blocked their view of the ground below, and they could see into a little meadow up ahead. Holy gods. The wyverns were enormous. Enormous, vicious, and those were indeed saddles on their backs.
Poisoned barbs on the tail,
Rowan mouthed in her ear.
With that wingspan, they can probably fly hundreds of miles a day.
He would know, she supposed. Only 13 wyverns were grounded in the meadow. The smallest of them was sprawled on his belly, face buried in a mound of wildflowers. Iron spikes gleamed on his tail in lieu of bone. Scars covered his body like a cat's stripes. And his wings. She knew the material grafted there. Spider silk. That much of it must have cost a fortune. The other wyverns were all normal, and all capable of ripping a man in half in one bite. They would be dead within moments against one of these things, but an army 3,000 strong? Panic pushed in. I am Aelin Ashriver Galathinius.
That one. I bet she's the wing leader,
Rowan said, pointing now to the women gathered at the edge of the meadow. Not women, witches. They were all young and beautiful, with hair and skin of every shade and color. But even from the distance, she picked out the one Rowan had pointed to. Her hair was like living moonlight, her eyes like burnished gold. She was the most beautiful person Aelin had ever seen, and the most horrifying. She moved with a swagger that Aelin supposed only an immortal could achieve, her red cloak snapping behind her, the riding leathers clinging to her lithe body. A living weapon. That's what the wing leader was. The wing leader prowled through the camp, inspecting the wyverns and giving orders Aelin's human ears couldn't hear. The other 12 witches seemed to track her every movement, as if she were the axis of their world, and two of them followed behind her especially closely. Lieutenants. Aelin fought to keep her balance on the wide bow. Any army that Terrasen might raise would be annihilated, along with the friends around her. They were all so dead. Rowan put a hand on her waist, as if he could hear the refrain pounding through her with every heartbeat.
You took down one of their matrons,
he said in her ear, barely more than a rustling leaf.
You can take down her inferiors.
Maybe, maybe not, given the way the 13 witches in the clearing moved and interacted. They were a tight-knit, brutal unit. They did not look like the sort that took prisoners. If they did, they likely ate them. Would they fly Lysandra to Morath once the prison wagon arrived? If so, Lysandra doesn't get within 30 feet of the wyverns. If she got hauled onto one of them, then it would already be too late.
Agreed,
Rowan murmured.
Horses approaching from the north, and more wings from the west. Let's go.
The matron, then. The horses would be the king and the prison wagon, and Dorian. Adian looked ready to start ripping out witch throats as they reached the ground, and slunk through the forest again, heading for the clearing. Nezrin had an arrow knocked in her bow as she slipped into the brush to provide cover. Her face grave, ready for anything. At least that made one of them. Aelin fell into step beside Kaol.
No matter what you see or hear, do not move.
We need to assess Dorian before we act. Just one of those Volg princes is lethal.
I know,
he said, refusing to meet her stare.
You can trust me.
I need you to make sure Lysandra gets out. You know this forest better than any of us. Get her somewhere safe. Kaol nodded.
I promise.
She didn't doubt it. Not after this winter. She reached out, paused, and then put a hand on his shoulder. I won't touch Dorian, she said. I swear it. His bronze eyes flickered.
Thank you.
They kept moving. Adian and Rowan had them all doubling back to the area they'd scouted earlier. A little outcropping of boulders with enough brush for them to crouch unseen and observe everything that was happening in the clearing. Slowly, like lovely wraiths from a hell realm, the witches appeared. The white-haired witch strode to greet an older, black-haired female who could only be the matron of the Blackbeak clan. Behind the matron, a cluster of witches hauled a large covered wagon, much like the one the Yellowlegs had once parked before the Glass Palace. The wyverns must have carried it between them. It looked ordinary, painted black and blue and yellow, but Aelin had a feeling that she didn't want to know what was inside. Then the royal party arrived. She didn't know where to look. At the King of Otterlin? At the small, too familiar prison wagon in the center of the riders? Or at Dorian, riding at his father's side, that black collar around his neck, and nothing human in his face.
Chapter 58
Manon Blackbeak hated this forest. The trees were unnaturally close, so close that they'd had to leave the wyverns behind in order to make their way to the clearing, a half mile from the crumbling temple. At least the humans hadn't been stupid enough to pick the temple itself as a meeting site. It was too precariously perched, the ravine too open to spying eyes. Yesterday, Manon and the 13 had scouted all the clearings within a mile radius, weighing them for their visibility, accessibility, and cover, and finally settled on this one, near enough to where the king had originally demanded they meet, but a far more protected spot. Rule one of dealing with mortals? Never let them pick the exact location. First, her grandmother and her escort coven strode through the trees from wherever they'd landed, a covered wagon in tow, no doubt carrying the weapon she'd created. She assessed Manon with a slashing glance and merely said,
Keep silent and out of our way. Speak only when spoken to. Don't cause trouble, or I'll rip out your throat.
Later, then. She would talk to her grandmother about the Volg later. The king was late, and his party made enough god's damned noise as they traipsed through the woods that Manon heard them a good 5 minutes before the king's massive black war horse appeared around the bend in the path. The other riders flowed behind him like a dark shadow. The scent of the Volg slithered along her body. They brought a prison wagon with them, containing a prisoner to be transferred to Morath, Female, from the smell of her, and strange. She'd never come across that scent before. Not Volg, not Fae, not entirely human. Interesting. But the 13 were warriors, not couriers. Her hands behind her back, Manon waited as her grandmother glided toward the king, monitoring his human Volg entourage while they surveyed the clearing. The man closest to the king didn't bother glancing around. His sapphire eyes went right to Manon and stayed there. He would have been beautiful, were it not for the dark collar around his throat and the utter coldness in his perfect face. He smiled at Manon as though he knew the taste of her blood. She stifled the urge to bare her teeth and shifted her focus to the matron, who had now stopped before the mortal king. Such a reek from these people. How was her grandmother not grimacing as she stood before them? "Your Majesty," her grandmother said, her black robes like liquid night as she gave the slightest of bobs. Manon shut down the bark of protest in her throat. Never, never had her grandmother bowed or curtsied or so much as nodded for another ruler. Not even the other matrons. Manon shoved the outrage down deep as the king dismounted in one powerful movement.
"High witch," he said, angling his head in not quite a bow, but enough to show some kernel of acknowledgement.
A massive sword hung at his side. His clothes were dark and rich, and his face, cruelty incarnate. Not the cold, cunning cruelty that Manon had honed and delighted in, but base, brute cruelty. The kind that sent all those men to break into her cottages, thinking her in need of a lesson. This was the man to whom they were to bow, to whom her grandmother had lowered her head a fraction of an inch. Her grandmother gestured behind her with an iron-tipped hand, and Manon lifted her chin.
"I present to you my granddaughter, Manon, heir of the Blackbeak clan and wing leader of your aerial cavalry."
Manon stepped forward, enduring the raking gaze of the king. The dark-haired young man who had ridden at his side dismounted with fluid grace, still smirking at her. She ignored him.
"You do your people a great service, wing leader," the king said, his voice like granite.
Manon just stared at him, keenly aware of the matron judging her every move.
"Aren't you going to say anything?"
the king demanded, his thick brows, one scarred, high. "I was told to keep my mouth shut," Manon said. Her grandmother's eyes flashed. "Unless you'd prefer I get on my knees and grovel." Oh, there would certainly be hell to pay for that remark. Her grandmother turned to the king.
"She's an arrogant thing, but you'll find no deadlier warrior."
But the king was smiling, though it didn't reach his dark eyes.
"I don't think you've ever groveled for anything in your life, wing leader."
Manon gave him a half smile in return, her iron teeth out. Let his young companion wet himself at the sight. "We witches aren't born to grovel before humans." The king chuckled mirthlessly and faced her grandmother, whose iron-tipped fingers had curved as if she were imagining them around Manon's throat.
"You chose our wing leader well, matron,"
he said, and then gestured to the wagon painted with the Iron Teeth banner.
"Let us see what you've brought for me. I hope it will be equally impressive and worth the wait."
Her grandmother grinned, revealing iron teeth that had begun to rust in some spots, and ice licked up Manon's spine.
"This way."
Shoulders back, head high, Manon waited at the bottom of the wagon steps to follow the matron and the king inside. But the man, so much taller and wider than she up close, frowned at the sight of her.
"My son can entertain the wing leader."
And that was it. She was shut out as he and her grandmother vanished within. Apparently she wasn't to see this weapon, at least not as one of the first, wing leader or not. Manon took a breath and checked her temper. Half of the 13 encircled the wagon for the matron's safety, while the others dispersed to monitor the royal party around them, knowing their place, their inadequacy in the face of the 13.
The escort coven faded back into the tree line. Black uniformed guards watched them all. Some armed with spears, some with crossbows, some with vicious swords. The prince was now leaning against a gnarled oak. Noticing her attention, he gave her a lazy grin. It was enough. King's son or not, she didn't give a damn. Manon crossed the clearing, Sorrel behind her, on edge but keeping her distance. There was no one in earshot as Manon stepped a few feet away from the crown prince. "Hello, princeling," she purred. The world kept slipping out from underneath Kaol's feet, so much so that he grabbed a handful of dirt just to remember where he was, and that this was real, not some nightmare. Dorian. His friend. Unharmed, but not Dorian. Not even close to Dorian, as the prince smirked at that beautiful white-haired witch. The face was the same, but the soul gazing out of those sapphire eyes had not been created in this world. Kaol squeezed the dirt harder. He had run. He had run from Dorian and let this happen. It hadn't been hope that he carried when he fled, but stupidity. Aelin had been right. It would be a mercy to kill him. With the king and matron occupied, Kaol glanced toward the wagon and then at Aelin, lying on her stomach in the brush, a dagger out. She gave him a quick nod, her mouth a tight line. Now, if they were going to make their move to free Lysandra, it would have to be now. And for Nehemia, for the friend vanished beneath a wordstone collar, he would not falter. The ancient cruel demon squatting inside him began thrashing as the white-haired witch sauntered up to him. It had been content to sneer from afar. "One of us. One of ours," it hissed to him. "We made it, so we'll take it." Every step closer made her unbound hair shimmer like moonlight on water. But the demon began scrambling away as the sun lit up her eyes. "Not too close," it said. "Don't let the witchling too close, the eyes of the Volg kings." "Hello, princeling," she said, her voice bedroom soft and full of glorious death. "Hello, witchling," he said. And the words were his own. For a moment, he was so stunned that he blinked. He blinked. The demon inside of him recoiled, clawing at the walls of his mind. "Eyes of the Volg kings, eyes of our masters," it shrieked. "Do not touch that one." "Is there a reason you're smiling at me?" she said. "Or shall I interpret it as a death wish?" "Do not speak to it." He didn't care. Let this be another dream, another nightmare. Let this new lovely monster devour him whole. He had nothing beyond the here and now. "Do I need a reason to smile at a beautiful woman?" "I'm not a woman." Her iron nails glinted as she crossed her arms. "And you," she sniffed, "man or demon?"
"Prince,"
he said. That's what the thing inside him was. He had never learned its name.
"Do not speak to it."
He cocked his head. "I've never been with a witch." Let her rip out his throat for that. End it. A row of iron fangs snapped down over her teeth as her smile grew. "I've been with plenty of men. You're all the same. Taste the same." She looked him over as if he were her next meal.
"I dare you,"
he managed to say. Her eyes narrowed, the gold like living embers. He'd never seen anyone so beautiful. This witch had been crafted from the darkness between the stars.
"I think not, prince," she said in her midnight voice.
She sniffed again, her nose crinkling slightly. "But would you bleed red or black?"
"I'll bleed whatever color you tell me to."
"Step away. Get away." The demon prince inside him yanked so hard he took a step. But not away, toward the white-haired witch. She let out a low, vicious laugh. "What is your name, prince?"
his name. He didn't know what that was.
She reached out, her iron nails glimmering in the dappled sunlight. The demon's screaming was so loud in his head that he wondered if his ears would bleed. Iron clinked against stone as she grazed the collar around his neck.
Higher. If she just slashed higher.
Like a dog, she murmured. Leashed to your master.
She ran a finger along the curve of the collar, and he shuddered, in fear, in pleasure, in anticipation of the nails tearing into his throat.
What is your name?
A command, not a question, as eyes of pure gold met his.
Dorian,
he breathed.
Your name is nothing. Your name is mine,
the demon hissed. And a wave of that human woman screaming swept him away. Crouched in the brush just 20 feet from the prison wagon, Aelin froze.
Dorian.
It couldn't have been. There wasn't a chance of it. Not when the voice that Dorian had spoken with was so empty, so hollow, but... Beside her, Kael's eyes were wide. Had he heard the slight shift? The wing leader cocked her head, her iron-tipped hand still touching the wordstone collar.
Do you want me to kill you, Dorian?
Aelin's blood went cold. Kael tensed, his hand going to his sword. Aelin gripped the back of his tunic in silent reminder. She had no doubt that across the clearing, Nezrin's arrow was already pointed with lethal accuracy at the wing leader's throat.
I want you to do lots of things to me,
the prince said, raking his eyes along the witch's body. The humanity was gone again. She'd imagined it. The way the king had acted. That was a man who held pure control over his son, confident that there was no struggle inside. A soft, joyless laugh. And then the wing leader released Dorian's collar. Her red cloak flowed around her on a phantom wind as she stepped back.
Come find me again, prince, and we'll see about that.
A Volg prince inhabited Dorian, but Aelin's nose did not bleed in its presence, and there was no creeping fog of darkness. Had the king muted its powers so his son could deceive the world around him? Or was that battle still being waged inside the prince's mind?
Now. They had to move now, while the matron and the king remained in that painted wagon.
Rowan cupped his hands to his mouth and signaled with a bird's call so lifelike that none of the guards shifted. But across the clearing, Adian and Nezrin heard and understood. She didn't know how they managed to accomplish it, but a minute later the wyverns of the High Witch's Coven were roaring with alarm, the trees shuddering with the sound. Every guard and sentinel turned toward the racket, away from the prison wagon. It was all the distraction Aelin needed. She'd spent 2 weeks in one of those wagons. She knew the bars of the little window, knew the hinges and the locks. And Rowan, fortunately, knew exactly how to dispatch the 3 guards stationed at the back door without making a sound. She didn't dare breathe too loudly as she climbed the few steps to the back of the wagon, pulled out her lock-picking kit, and set to work. One look over here, one shift of the wind. There, the lock sprang open, and she eased back the door, bracing for squeaky hinges. By some god's mercy, it made no sound, and the wyverns went on bellowing. Lysandra was curled against the far corner, bloody and dirty, her short nightgown torn and her bare legs bruised. No collar, no ring on either hand. Aelin bit back her cry of relief and flicked her fingers to tell the courtesan to hurry. On near silent feet, Lysandra hurtled past her, right into the speckled brown and green cloak Rowan was holding out. 2 heartbeats later, she was down the steps and into the brush. Another beat, and the dead guards were inside the wagon with the door locked. Aelin and Rowan slipped back into the forest amid the roars of the wyverns. Lysandra was shivering where she knelt in the thicket. Kael before her, inspecting her wounds. He mouthed to Aelin that she was fine, and helped the courtesan rise to her feet before hauling her deeper into the woods. It had taken less than 2 minutes, and thank the gods. because a moment later the painted wagon's door was flung open, and the matron and king stormed out to see what the noise was about. A few paces from Aelin, Rowan monitored every step, every breath their enemy took. There was a flash of movement beside her, and then Adian and Nezrin were there, dirty and panting, but alive. The grin on Adian's face faltered as he peered back at the clearing behind them. The king stalked to the heart of the clearing, demanding answers.
Butchering bastard.
And for a moment, they were again in Terrasen, at that dinner table in her family's castle, where the king had eaten her family's food, drunk their finest wine, and then he'd tried to shatter her mind. Adian's eyes met hers, his body trembling with restraint, waiting for her order. She knew she might live to regret it, but Aelin shook her head. Not here. Not now. There were too many variables, and too many players on the board. They had Lysandra. It was time to go. The king told his son to get onto his horse, and barked orders to the others as the wingleader backed away from the prince, with a casual, lethal grace. The matron waited across the clearing, her voluminous black robes billowing despite her stillness. Aelin prayed that she and her companions would never run into the matron, at least not without an army behind them. Whatever the king had seen inside the painted wagon had been important enough that they hadn't risked letters about its specific details. Dorian mounted his horse, his face cold and empty.
"I'll come back for you," she'd promised him. She had not thought it would be in this way.
The king's party departed with eerie silence and efficiency, seemingly unaware that they were now missing three of their own. The stench of the Vog faded as they vanished, cleared away by a brisk wind, as if Oakwald itself wanted to wipe away any trace. Headed in the opposite direction, the witches prowled into the trees, lugging the wagon behind them with inhuman strength, until only the wingleader and her horrifying grandmother remained in the clearing. The blow happened so fast that Aelin couldn't detect it. Even Adian flinched. The smack reverberated through the forest, and the wingleader's face snapped to the side to reveal four lines of blue blood now running down her cheek.
"Insolent fool," the matron hissed.
Lingering near the trees, the beautiful golden-haired lieutenant observed every movement the matron made, so intensely that Aelin wondered if she would go for the matron's throat.
"Do you wish to cost me everything?"
"Grandmother, I sent you letters."
"I received your whining, sniveling letters, and I burned them."
"You are under orders to obey."
"Did you think my silence was not intentional? Do as the Duke says."
"How can you allow these—"
Another strike. Four more lines bleeding down the witch's face.
"You dare question me? Do you think yourself as good as a high witch now that you're wing leader?"
"No, matron."
There was no sign of that cocky, taunting tone of minutes before. Only cool, lethal rage. A killer by birth and training. But the golden eyes turned toward the painted wagon. A silent question. The matron leaned in, her rusted iron teeth within shredding distance of her granddaughter's throat.
"Ask it, Manon. Ask what's inside that wagon."
The golden-haired witch by the trees was ramrod straight. But the wingleader, Manon, bowed her head.
"You'll tell me when it's necessary."
"Go look. Let's see if it meets my granddaughter's standards."
With that, the matron strode into the trees, the second coven of witches now waiting for her. Manon Blackbeak didn't wipe away the blue blood sliding down her face as she walked up the steps of the wagon, pausing on the landing for only a heartbeat before entering the gloom beyond. It was as good a sign as any to get the hell out. With Adian and Nezrin guarding their backs, Aelin and Rowan hurried for the spot where Kaol and Lysandra would be waiting. Not without magic would she take on the king and Dorian. She didn't have a death wish, either for herself or her friends. She found Lysandra standing with a hand braced against a tree, wide-eyed, breathing hard. Kaol was gone. Chapter 59.
The demon seized control the moment the man who wielded the collar returned. It shoved him back into that pit of memory until he was the one screaming again. Until he was small and broken and fragmented. But those golden eyes lingered. Come find me again, Prince. A promise of death, of release. Come find me again. The words soon faded, swallowed up by screaming and blood, and the demon's cold fingers running over his mind. But the eyes lingered, and that name. Manon. Manon.
Kaol couldn't let the king take Dorian back to the castle. He might never get this chance again. He had to do it now. Had to kill him.
Kaol hurtled through the brush as quietly as he could, sword out, bracing himself. A dagger through the eye, a dagger, and then... talking from ahead, along with the rustling of leaves and wood.
Kaol neared the party, beginning to pray, beginning to beg for forgiveness for what he was about to do, and for how he had run.
He'd kill the king later. Let that kill be his last. But this would be the kill that broke him.
He drew his dagger, cocking his arm.
Dorian had been directly behind the king. One throw to knock the prince off the horse, then a sweep of his sword, and it could be over. Aelin and the others could deal with the aftermath. He'd already be dead. Kaol broke through the trees into a field, the dagger a burning weight in his hand. It was not the king's party that stood there in the tall grass and sunlight. 13 witches and their wyverns turned to him and smiled. Aelin ran through the trees as Rowan tracked Kaol by scent alone.
If he got them killed, if he got them hurt.
They'd left Nezrin to guard Lysandra, ordering them to head for the forest across the nearby temple ravine to wait under an outcropping of stones. Before herding Lysandra between the trees, Nezrin had tightly grabbed Aelin's arm and said,
"Bring him back."
Aelin had only nodded before bolting. Rowan was a streak of lightning through the trees, so much faster than her when she was stuck in this body. Adian sprinted close behind him. She ran as quickly as she could, but... the path veered away, and Kaol had taken the wrong fork. Where the hell had Kaol even been going? She could scarcely draw breath fast enough. Then light flooded in through a break in the trees, the other side of the wide meadow. Rowan and Adian stood a few feet into the swaying grass, their swords out, but downcast. She saw why a heartbeat later. Not 30 feet from them, Kaol's lip bled down his chin as the white-haired witch held him against her, iron nails digging into his throat. The prison wagon was open beyond them to reveal the 3 dead soldiers inside. The 12 witches behind the wingleader were all grinning with anticipatory delight as they took in Rowan and Adian, then her. "What's this?" the wingleader said, a killing light in her golden eyes. "Spies? Rescuers? Where did you take our prisoner?" Kaol struggled, and she dug her nails in farther. He stiffened. A trickle of blood leaked down his neck and onto his tunic.
Oh, gods, think. Think, think, think.
The wingleader shifted those burnt gold eyes to Rowan. "Your kind," the wingleader mused. "I have not seen for a time."
"Let the man go," Rowan said.
Manon's smile revealed a row of flesh-shredding iron teeth, far, far too close to Kaol's neck.
"I don't take orders from fey bastards."
"Let him go,"
Rowan said too softly.
"Or it will be the last mistake you make, wingleader."
In the field behind them, the wyverns were stirring, their tails lashing, wings shifting. The white-haired witch peered at Kaol, whose breathing had turned ragged.
"The king is not too far down the road. Perhaps I should hand you over to him."
The cuts on her cheeks, scabbed in blue, were like brutal war paint.
"He'll be furious to learn you stole his prisoner from me. Maybe you'll appease him, boy." Aelin and Rowan shared all of one look before she stepped up to his side, drawing Goldrin.
If you want a prize to give to the king, Aelin said, then take me.
Don't,
Kaol gasped out. The witch and all 12 of her sentinels now fixed their immortal, deadly attention on Aelin. Aelin dropped Goldrin into the grass and lifted her hands. Adian snarled in warning.
Why should I bother? The wing leader said. Perhaps we'll take you all to the king.
Adian's sword lifted slightly.
You can try.
Aelin carefully approached the witch, her hands still up.
You enter into a fight with us, and you and your companions will die.
The wing leader looked her up and down.
Who are you?
An order, not a question.
Aelin Galathinius.
Surprise, and perhaps something else, something Aelin couldn't identify, sparked in the wing leader's golden eyes.
The Queen of Terrasen.
Aelin bowed, not daring to take her attention off the witch.
At your service.
Only 3 feet separated her from the Blackbeak heir. The witch sliced a glance at Kaol, and then at Adian and Rowan.
Your court?
What's it to you?
The wing leader studied Adian again.
Your brother?
My cousin, Adian. Almost as pretty as me, wouldn't you say?
The witch didn't smile. But Aelin was now near enough. So close that the spatters of Kaol's blood lay in the grass before the tip of her boots.
The Queen of Terrasen.
Aelin's hope had not been misplaced. Even if the young queen was now towing the dirt and grass, unable to keep still while she bargained for the man's life. Behind her, the Fey warrior observed every flicker of movement. He'd be the deadly one, the one to look out for. It had been 50 years since she'd fought a Fey warrior. Bedded him, then fought him. He'd left the bones of her arm in pieces. She'd just left him in pieces. But he had been young, and arrogant, and barely trained. This male, he might very well be capable of killing at least a few of her 13, if she so much as harmed a hair on the queen's head. And then there was the golden-haired one, as large as the Fey male, but possessing his cousin's bright arrogance and honed wildness. He might be problematic if left alive too long. The queen kept fidgeting her foot in the grass. She couldn't be more than 20. And yet she moved like a warrior, too. Or she had until the incessant shifting around. But she halted the movement, as if realizing that it gave away her nerves, her inexperience. The wind was blowing in the wrong direction for Manon to detect the queen's true level of fear.
Well, wing leader?
Would the king put a collar around her fair neck, as he had the prince's? Or would he kill her? It made no difference. She would be a prize the king would welcome. Manon shoved the captain away, sending him stumbling toward the queen. Aelin reached out with an arm, nudging him to the side, behind her. Manon and the queen stared at each other. No fear in her eyes, in her pretty mortal face. None. It'd be more trouble than it was worth. Manon had bigger things to consider anyway. Her grandmother approved. Approved of the breeding, the breaking of the witches. Manon needed to get into the sky. Needed to lose herself in cloud and wind for a few hours. Days. Weeks. I have no interest in prisoners or battling today, Manon said. The Queen of Terrasen gave her a grin.
Good.
Manon turned away, barking at her 13 to get to their mounts.
I suppose, the queen went on, that makes you smarter than Baba Yellowlegs.
Manon stopped, staring straight ahead and seeing nothing of the grass or sky or trees. Asterin whirled.
What do you know of Baba Yellowlegs?
The queen gave a low chuckle, despite the warning growl from the Fey warrior. Slowly, Manon looked over her shoulder. The queen tugged apart the lapels of her tunic, revealing a necklace of thin scars as the wind shifted. the scent, iron and stone and pure hatred, hit Manon like a rock to the face. Every Iron Teeth witch knew the scent that forever lingered on those scars. Witch killer. Perhaps Manon would lose herself in blood and gore instead.
"You're carrion,"
Manon said, and lunged, only to slam face first into an invisible wall, and then freeze entirely.
"Run,"
Aelin breathed, snatching up Goldrin and bolting for the trees. The wingleader was frozen in place, her sentinels wide-eyed as they rushed to her. Kaol's human blood wouldn't hold the spell for long.
"The ravine,"
Adian said, not looking back from where he sprinted ahead with Kaol toward the temple. They hurtled through the trees, the witches still in the meadow, still trying to break the spell that had trapped their wingleader.
"You,"
Rowan said as he ran beside her,
"are one very lucky woman."
"Tell me that again when we're out of here," she panted, leaping over a fallen tree. A roar of fury set the birds scattering from the trees, and Aelin ran faster. Oh, the wingleader was pissed, really, really pissed. Aelin hadn't believed for one moment that the witch would have let them walk away without a fight. She had needed to buy whatever time they could get. The trees cleared, revealing a barren stretch of land jutting toward the deep ravine, and the temple perched on the spit of rock in the center. On the other side, Oakwald sprawled onward. Connected only by two chain and wood bridges, it was the sole way across the ravine for miles, and with the dense foliage of Oakwald blocking the wyverns, it was the only way to escape the witches, who would no doubt pursue on foot.
"Hurry!"
Rowan shouted, as they made for the crumbling temple ruins. The temple was small enough that not even the priestesses had dwelled here. The only decorations on the stone island were five weather-stained pillars and a crumbling domed roof, not even an altar, or at least one that had survived the centuries. Apparently, people had given up on Temis long before the King of Otterlin came along. She just prayed that the bridges on either side. Adian hurled himself to a stop before the first footbridge, Kaol 30 paces behind, Aelin and Rowan following.
"Secure,"
Adian said. Before she could bark a warning, he thundered across. The bridge bounced and swayed, but held. Held even as her damn heart stopped. Then Adian was at the Temple Island, the single thin pillar of rock carved out by the rushing river flowing far, far below. He waved Kaol on.
"One at a time,"
he ordered. Beyond him, the second bridge waited. Kaol hurried through the stone pillars that flanked the entrance to the first bridge, the thin iron chains on the sides writhing as the bridge bounced. He kept upright, flying toward the temple, faster than she'd ever seen him run during all those morning exercises through the castle grounds. Then Aelin and Rowan were at the columns and—
"Don't even try to argue,"
Rowan hissed, shoving her ahead of him.
Gods above, that was a wicked drop beneath them.
The roar of the river was barely a whisper. But she ran, ran because Rowan was waiting, and there were the witches breaking through the trees with fey swiftness. The bridge bucked and swayed as she shot over the aging wooden planks. Ahead, Adian had cleared the second bridge to the other side, and Kaol was now sprinting across it.
Faster.
She had to go faster. She leaped the final few feet onto the temple rock. Ahead, Kaol exited the second bridge and drew his blade as he joined Adian on the grassy cliff beyond, an arrow knocked in her cousin's bow, aimed at the trees behind her. Aelin lunged up the few stairs onto the bald temple platform. The entire circular space was barely more than 30 feet across, bordered on all sides by a sheer plunge and death. Temis, apparently, was not the forgiving sort. She twisted to look behind. Rowan was running across the bridge, so fast that the bridge hardly moved, but Aelin swore. The wingleader had reached the posts, flinging herself over and jumping through the air to land a third of the way down the bridge. Even Adian's warning shot went long, the arrow embedding where any mortal should have landed. But not a witch. Holy burning hell.
"Go,"
Rowan roared at Aelin, but she palmed her fighting knives, bending her knees as an arrow fired by the golden-haired lieutenant shot for Aelin from the other side of the ravine. Aelin twisted to avoid it, only to find a second arrow from the witch already there, anticipating her maneuver. A wall of muscle slammed into her, shielding her and shoving her to the stones. And the witch's arrow went clean through Rowan's shoulder. Chapter 60. For a moment, the world stopped. Rowan slammed onto the temple stones, his blood spraying on the aging rock. Aelin's scream echoed down the ravine. But then he was up again, running and bellowing at her to go. Beneath the dark arrow protruding through his shoulder, blood already soaked his tunic, his skin. If he had been 1 inch farther behind, it would have hit his heart. Not 40 paces down the bridge, the wing leader closed in on them. Adian rained arrows on her sentinels with preternatural precision, keeping them at bay by the tree line. Aelin wrapped an arm around Rowan, and they raced across the temple stones, his face paling as the wound gushed blood. She might have still been screaming, or sobbing. There was such a roaring silence in her. Her heart. It had been meant for her heart. And he had taken that arrow for her. The killing calm spread through her like hoarfrost. She'd kill them all. Slowly. They reached the second bridge just as Adian's barrage of arrows halted. His quiver no doubt emptied. She shoved Rowan onto the planks.
Run, she said.
No.
Run!
It was a voice that she'd never heard herself use. A queen's voice that came out, along with the blind yank she made on the blood oath that bound them together. His eyes flashed with fury, but his body moved as though she